disruption.
Passengers braced for yet more disruption. We will bring you the latest. And
Lord Wolfson has a decision to make. He serves as the shadow attorney general. He's in the shadow cabinet. And he's also trying to act for Roman Abramovich as a lawyer.
Is it a conflict of interest that the Conservative Shadow Attorney General is acting for sanctioned Russian billionaire Roman Abramovich? Your calls on that, 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. Passengers are experiencing long delays on Eurostar and the shuttle after a power supply failure in the Channel Tunnel. Thousands of people were stuck on trains overnight and many were told to rebook their journeys. Michelle was due to catch a train to Brussels for New Year's Eve, but told LBC she's still stuck at London St Pancras.
I had preparations today, but yeah, I cancelled those, so I hope I'll make it home in time for New Year's Eve. Yeah. But we'll see. Delayed is fine. As long as I can get home, it's already okay, but if it's not happening today, then I'll be a bit stressed out. But yeah, it is what it is.
The first trains leaving London were cancelled this morning, but officials say they're aiming to run all services as usual going forward. There'll be an increased police presence on the streets of Sydney this evening after the Bondi Beach terror attack. 15 people were killed when two gunmen opened fire at a Hanukkah event there earlier this month. Mal Lanyon, the police commissioner for New South Wales, says there's a complex operation in place.
We will have over 2,500 police officers in the central metropolitan area alone. That will comprise officers on the land and on the water, and we'll also have our aviation support up in the air to provide support. I want the community not only to be safe, but feel safe.
Thieves have used a drill to steal millions of euros worth of cash and valuables from a bank in Germany. They broke open more than 3,000 safe deposit boxes filled with money, gold and jewellery. Police likened the break-in to the Hollywood heist film Ocean's 11, saying it was very professionally executed. Security guards are among staff at the Palace of Westminster going on strike today. The Public and Commercial Services Union say around 300 of their members are due to walk out over pay and conditions. It's their fourth day of industrial action so far this year. And 3 million train tickets are going to be discounted as part of the government's Great British Rail Sale. Off-peak and advance fares have been lowered between the 13th of January and the 25th of March. Ministers have also promised to freeze rail prices in England over the next year. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with lots of sunshine elsewhere and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Hey Sainsbury's, I'm having a big party. Got any finger food that won't cost an arm and a leg?
We do. All our Sainsbury's party food is 3 for 2 with Nectar. Like our Taste the Difference crispy mushroom tartlets, mini Wagyu beef cheeseburgers or crispy chicken bao buns. That will get them coming back for seconds.
And thirds.
Want to save big on party pleasers? Ask Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us.
18 plus, Nectar required. Cheapest product free. Available in store and online, excluding locals. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good morning. 7:03 is the time. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Coming up,
a man from Afghanistan has been arrested after a suspected crowbar attack on 5 people at a hospital on Merseyside. I'm LBC's Chris Chambers with the details.
The latest from Merseyside later on this hour. Also,
having a modern ambulance fleet is absolutely essential for making sure we improve our urgent and emergency care services. And that's why I'm really proud that this government is investing in 500 new ambulances.
New ambulances announced on the service's busiest night of the year. We're going to be joined later on by the Chief Executive of the London Ambulance Service, Jason Killins. Also,
can I just say one thing? You guys pay for tickets and you're paying for my prize money, so thank you. Thank you for my money.
Yeah, he was contender for Sports Personality of the Year, but now Luke Little is being booed at Ali Pally. That was on Monday. He plays again tomorrow. Will the same happen again? And why on earth was he booed? I'm still sort of scratching my head on that. Millions are flocking to A&E with coughs, headaches and blocked noses. We'll discuss that later on. Well, we'll also talk about the actress who plays Ringo Starr's wife in a forthcoming film about the Beatles says she can't name all 4 members of the band. Has she been living under a rock?
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes past seven is the time. You're listening to Henry Reilly, Infinite Ferrari, this morning on LBC. Lovely to... I keep saying Infinite Ferrari. I mean, I don't think he's ever worked this period between Christmas and New Year, but that's what I'm contractually obliged, I'll get there eventually, to say. Lovely to have your company and with you here till 10 o'clock. This hour, I want to talk to you about... Well, it's an interview that's been given by the Chief Inspector of Probation. His name is Martin Jones. And his... Oh, he has found, or he has said, given his expertise in the role, that prisoners are committing, freed prisoners, a record number of serious further offences, including murders, rapes and violent assaults. Almost 900 serious crimes have been reported in the past year, and they were committed by offenders under the supervision of probation after being released from jail or while they were still serving community sentences. Now, it's the highest number since records began and accounts for at least one murder and two rapes every week of the year from people who have been freed. Now, if you look at the full list of offences, it includes manslaughter, attempted murder, sexual assaults, arson, kidnapping and causing death by dangerous driving or with a stolen vehicle. Martin Jones, who, as I mentioned, Chief Inspector of Probation, said that public safety is now being put at risk because the officers, the probation officers, were missing key warning signs of the threats posed by offenders supervised in the community. Now, he is so concerned that he has now announced a six-month nationwide inspection of all of the probation management and how they look after serious criminals. Now, these risks have been compounding by an overcrowding crisis in jails that has forced the early release of tens of thousands of offenders. And I understand why the early release scheme was necessary. I do understand that we were in a situation where we literally had no prison space, or we were certainly running out. And if you look at the reasons which Martin Jones talks about, we are 30% down on frontline probation officers than are required. So it's sort of no wonder that this is happening. Plus, as David Lammy and all came to fruition, all came to our knowledge after the situation, and it is still happening, where prisoners were freed by mistake, it was very much a sort of paper-based system, the information sharing in prisons and between probation, police and social services. So the whole system's a mess. I know we sort of say that ad nauseum on LBC, but it's certainly is. But if we do have 900 serious crimes, the highest since records began, people who are committing these crimes, who are under supervision, who have been freed offenders, then I don't really know what else the solution is. Are we getting the probation wrong? Are we wrongly assessing people who shouldn't be out? Is it as simple as hiring more probation officers? If you work in this field, I'd like to hear from you, but this affects everyone. This affects you because this is the highest number since records began, and it is serious offences. And I remind you, murders, rapes, attempted murders, manslaughter, arson, being committed by people who have been freed from prison. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. We'll come to your views on that and get some expert commentary. And this all comes, as I mentioned, as we have seen, I mean, it really dominated the news a few months ago, not just Wandsworth Prison, but more generally, the number of people who are missing prisoners. This was David Lammy in the Commons.
Get a grip, man. I know I'm the Justice Secretary. That's why I'm at the dispatch box, also as Deputy Prime Minister. We know that. I'm not going to pray an aid. Of course we know that there have been spikes since 2021 under his watch. When did he come to this house and apologise?
And this all happened as well because Hadish Kabaltu was wrongly released. He was released in error and he was walking around Dawson with an avocado bag and various libraries, you might remember. The Shadow Justice Secretary, Robert Jenrick, spoke again in the House of Commons.
Having been mistakenly released, Hadish Kabaltu came back to prison asking to be deported not once, not twice, but five times. His officials, briefing the press, called it the mother of all... Yeah, they're not wrong, are they? Calamity Lammy strikes again.
Now, of course, that is a separate but related issue with prisoners not even having to abscond, in the case of Hadish Kabaltu, being just released and given a bit of cash and told off you go. We'll come to your calls in a moment. This also featured a sort of similar story in the front of the Daily Mail. Police facing ruin from Labour's soft justice crime wave. Their reforms will unleash a crime wave, so says the head of the National Police Chiefs. Well, he hasn't quite said that, but he's hinted that some of the changes may be difficult. Tom Wheatley is president of the Prison Government Governors Association, and joins me now. How seriously should we take this warning from Martin Jones, the Chief Inspector of Probation, Mr. Wheatley? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Henry. We should obviously take it seriously. This is simply a symptom of a criminal justice system that's under intense pressure. As you pointed out in your intro, the prison capacity crisis has driven an increase in the number of people who've been released early from prison. And that's all been done necessarily because prisons need to receive people from courts. But what that's done is that's put that's a huge increase in the probation caseload. And that was all done very quickly without probation having time to recruit and train and onboard and, bring on an experienced staff group to deal with them all.
Okay, and I note that point. Why do we have 30% fewer probation officers, frontline officers, than are required?
The requirement is driven by the volumes of people going through. So that's part of it. The sentencing review and the potential change in the proportion of a prisoner's sentence that they will spend on probation is likely to drive an increased need for probation officers. Probation officers are highly professional, and probation officer training takes a significant period of time. And so it's very difficult, the sort of lead-in time to enable you to have enough probation officers available to supervise those prisoners is significant. And we've made an awful lot of changes that have pushed people onto probation very quickly without probation having the opportunity to effectively respond and up their numbers to deal with the volumes.
I remind you of the figures again. Almost 900 serious crimes recorded in the past year as being committed by offenders under supervision of probation. What is to be done to stop that happening?
Well, I don't think that we are in a position to stop people under probation supervision from continuing to offend. That has always happened.
Sure.
I think that the issue here has been the increase in volume. So that number has gone up because the number of people under probation supervision went up massively due to prison early release schemes. So, it's a volume of people, all of whom were released over a very short period, into a staff group that wasn't, increased in size to enable them to deal with it. And that's led to this significant increase.
Thank you very much for your time. Tom Wheatley is president of the Prison Governors Association, joining me 12 minutes after 7. Matthew Scott is a criminal barrister at Pump Courts Chambers and a legal blogger at barristerblogger.com. Could I put that same question to you, please, Matthew Scott? If we have the highest number since records began of people who have been committing serious offences and they are under supervision, then what is to be done to, you can't eliminate that, I appreciate, but to reduce that? Good morning.
Morning, Henry. Well, I'd like to say something different and novel from Mr. Wheatley, but actually I agree with everything he's said. The problem here is that probation is under enormous stress, just as prisons are. We've probably heard more about the stress on prisons and how they're totally overcrowded, and that's led to early releases of prisoners. But that's been based on the prisoners released have been supervised then by probation, and probation itself is frankly in a bit of a mess. I think one probation officer recently described it as like a leaking bucket. The people are leaving the service more quickly than they're coming in. And the report from the Inspector of Probation highlights this: inexperienced officers completing risk assessments, lack of training, insufficient training, and so on and so forth. So they're being released from prison into a probation service which frankly can't cope.
Is it as easy as just getting better probation officers, though?
Well, obviously that would help. That's not easy, though, because at the moment, probation service is not seen as a terribly attractive career option by many people, and many probation officers that were working for probation and experienced officers have been leaving, and it takes time and effort to train new ones. So it's not as simple as that, no.
Do you accept why people listening will be concerned? I mean, for instance, the Daily Mail carries a story today that the estimated bill for having to deal with more criminals on the streets has doubled to now 800 million, according to Home Office analysis, when looking at, again, reoffending and people who have been released. With Gavin Stevens saying the National Police Chiefs Council lead, saying that he's particularly worried by that. I mean, people understandably are quite concerned that we have these record number of figures and the sheer cost that's going into monitoring people.
Well, clearly, if you're releasing more people or sentencing people to shorter prison sentences or community sentences rather than prison, which is the plan under the sentencing bill that's going through Parliament at the moment, then clearly that is going to put more strain on the probation service. The idea is to take the strain off the prison service, which can't cope, and put it onto the probation service. Well, if the probation service can't cope, then certainly you're going to get more people committing offences whilst on probation.
Thank you for your time. Matthew Scott is criminal barrister at Pump Court Chambers and legal blogger at barristerblogger.com. If you do work or have experience in the probation field or the sort of general criminal justice field, I would very much like to hear from you. But more generally as well, I mean, how concerned are you this huge bill, £800 million to deal with thousands of more criminals on the streets and the highest number since records began of crimes, serious crimes, being committed by offenders who are under supervision for probation? And that accounts for at least one murder and two rapes every week of the year. It's clearly a situation that can't continue, but what is to be done? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. This will link to the early release scheme. Does it show that we are just soft on crime? 84850, the number to text, or you can ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC. Your views next. Also,
Eurostar delays enter a second day. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight at St Pancras Station.
And I'm LBC's travel editor Joanne Webb with all the details of today's disruption.
More on that next, 7:16 the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Passengers are experiencing long delays on Eurostar and Le Shuttle this morning after a power supply failure yesterday. There'll be an increased police presence on the streets of Sydney this evening after the Bondi Beach terror attack. And security guards are among staff at the Palace of Westminster going on strike today. LBC weather, a chilly start for most of the UK, staying dry with lots of sunshine for most and a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 is closed clockwise between junctions 12 at the M3 and 13 at Staines. It's because of a fire and there are lengthy delays on the approach. So if you're heading that way towards Heathrow Airport, do allow yourself extra time. Also, problems continue on the M1 northbound. It's very busy up to junction 14 at Milton Keynes. Lots of roads are already closed ahead of the New Year celebrations, but most of the closures will go in place at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So that's all the roads along the Thames from Westminster all the way up to Southwark Bridge. Eurostar and Eurotunnel services continue to be severely disrupted after the overhead wire problems yesterday.
This is LBC.
Say yes to summer with the biggest ever TUI sale with a My TUI account. Say yes to flexible payment options. Say yes to free kids' places, even in the school summer holidays. With so many holiday options to choose from, you pick it, we sort it. Holiday countdown started. TUI, Atoll and Apta protected. Booking T's and C's apply. Selected departures, minimum spend apply. Subject to availability. See website for details.
Brighten your January with the Big Hendy Sale. Get up to £1,000 off selected used vehicles across every dealership and brand in the fantastic Hendy range. From sporty to spacious, from petrol to hybrid and all-electric powertrains, we've got a vehicle to match every style and budget. Don't miss out. These offers won't last forever. Head down to your nearest Hendy dealership today and drive into the new year with incredible value and a car you'll love. Offer on used vehicles only. T's and C's apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:19 is the time. Good morning. Henry Reilly with you here on LBC for breakfast. Still going to go through the front pages of the newspapers. We're talking, though, this hour, the warning from the Chief Inspector of Probation, Martin Jones, who has said he has found, the figures back him up, the highest number since records began, 900 almost serious crimes recorded in the past year committed by offenders under supervision of probation. What is going wrong with our probation service or the criminal justice system more generally? It's all very well saying we need more probation officers, we haven't got enough, and better probation officers. Fine, but are we simply releasing people too early if they're going on to commit serious crimes? And these are not petty crimes, by the way. This is, as I say, murder, rape, manslaughter, sexual assaults, kidnapping, death by dangerous driving, and the list goes on. The Times this morning, front page, Britain lags with lowest investment across G7. There's a picture of David Lammy, probably a picture he doesn't necessarily want to see, with the family of Alaa Abdel Fattah campaigning for his release. The Daily Mirror, we're in AJ's corner. This we touched on yesterday. Boxing champion Anthony Joshua's mum is by his side in hospital as he recovers from the horror crash that killed two of his closest pals. The Daily Telegraph, Labour will wreck special forces. This is a warning from former SAS commanders. There are seven of them in total who warn the government against changes to combat immunity rules. That's the feature section. The Sun, AJ, I'm in pain all over my body. This is an exclusive. Devastated Anthony Joshua said yesterday, again, I feel pain all over my body. After the high-speed horror crash which killed two of his pals, he had a miraculous escape from death after the crash in Nigeria, but it claimed the life of two of his close pals. The iPaper, rail passengers told not to travel for New Year after Eurostar chaos, and we'll get the latest from our reporter and travel editor in a moment. The Daily Star, I'm looking forward to discussing this later on. Give a littler respect, playing on the Aretha Franklin song, but Luke Littler, who was being booed at the darts. I don't understand why he was booed. I thought he was one of the most popular sports people in the country. Why was he being booed? Or is that just what you get at sort of the slightly rowdy Ali Pally? Financial Times, boycott. Oh, no, I can't even read it. It might as well be in Chinese, the FT. I mean, buyout groups sell assets to themselves at record rates, if that's important to you. The Guardian, primary care crisis blamed on A&E as visits for coughs and hiccups surge. Millions of people turning to A&E for minor ailments, including coughs and blocked noses and hiccups. The Daily Express has an exclusive. Meddling Euro judges take on Shamima case. And the Daily Mail, as I mentioned earlier on, police facing ruin from Labour's soft justice crime wave. Danny's in Westminster. Hi, Danny.
Hello, how are you doing, Henry?
What needs to be done about the criminal justice system? I will, by the way. Thank you.
Oh, well, I've got no idea even where to start, because it relates to the criminal justice system, the probation, the hospitals, the prison service, all of it. So I've had lots and lots of hospital, and I've got 8 stitches on my face.
Okay.
And my mental health is incredibly poor.
I've got lots and lots
of mental health diagnoses, lots and lots of underlying other health conditions. I'm on loads of medication for all of it. And I was put in prison in July. I was away for 5 months, basically. I was released on the 5th of December this year.
Oh, right.
It was a Friday night. It was 8
o'clock. Well, you see, you've only been out for 3 weeks.
Well, no, because I've been back already since then. So what it was Friday night, 8 o'clock at night. They lost all my property. I got no discharge grant upon release. I've never been released without my medication before. They released me with none of my medication. I'm also on a methadone maintenance script. I was on 50 mils of methadone for the whole time. They released me without a script. So the next day I was in hospital. They contacted the prison. The prison confirmed you. Friday morning, so they gave me my medication, my methadone. They put me in a hotel for one night and said there's a script to go and collect on Monday morning. So when I went to go and get it, they said, no, there's no script here for you. What's your links to the air? So I said, I've been sleeping rough around here for like 2 years. I showed them my license, which clearly says I'm on probation at Westminster Probation, and I just left the local hospital. And they said no, like they can't give me a script. So I ended up in hospital a second time. They gave me my medication again, my methadone again, and put me in a hotel for 2 nights. And after that,
right.
I came out and I ended up in hospital a third time. and then back in prison on a recall. But the reason for that, though, on the Monday morning, out of everything I'm trying to tackle, I thought I better tackle probation first, before yes. benefits, before money, before medication. So I phoned the number on the licence, and I was trying to find out where I've got to go, who's my probation officer. They said, we've never heard of you before, you're not meant to be here, et cetera, et cetera. And I was ringing them all throughout the day, trying to get to the bottom of it, and even the next day and the next day. And in the end, I was thinking, this is going to lead to a recall. But I don't know if I'm either naive or stupid, but every time I go away, I think, this can be the last time. I haven't got to keep coming here anymore. So, including recalls, I've been to prison like 80 or 90 times.
What?
I've been to prison 10 times in a year before. In 2019, I went to prison
twice. What for, though, Daddy? For petty crime or...?
Yeah, just being homeless, petty. I used to be on drugs, a drug user. I was homeless.
Can I ask what you were in for most recently?
Yeah, I got caught with two. So I was self-arming a lot, but I was picking up things off the floor. And I was getting, all my wounds were infected, on both arms, all over my chest and everything. There was pus coming out of them on a daily basis.
Let's not go into too much. Obviously, it's sort of breakfast time.
I was incredibly ill, and I thought, so I started using a scalpel instead, basically. And I used it on my face, and I had 8 stitches. When I went to go and get them stitched up, because there was blood all over,
It's very graphic, Danny. Let's keep.
I'm very sorry about that.
No, don't be silly. I know it's very personal to you. The sort of young ears might be listening as well.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
That's all right. Don't worry. But what were you in for?
Because I got caught with the scalpel that I had on me. I was using to self harm in a more cleaner way.
Got it. Okay. Well, my goodness, that is an awful lot to take in, Danny, and I get the points that you make, and obviously it's a very personal experience to you, and I suppose it does point to the wider failings, as it were. Danny there in Westminster. I wish we had more time. We'll speak another time, Danny, because we're just up against the clock. 7:26 is the time. Aaron, with you in a moment. As I mentioned when I was going through the front pages of the newspapers, rail passengers told not to travel for New Year after Eurostar chaos. I see pictures of a couple got married, didn't they, at St Pancras Station, who were impacted as well. Let's get the very latest. Fraser Knight is LBC's reporter at St Pancras Station in London. Morning, Fraser.
Morning, Henry. It's very, very busy here this morning. Eurostar has said it's planning to run all of its services today, but passengers are, of course, bracing for more delays after thousands of journeys were affected by the power outage in the Channel Tunnel yesterday. Now, the 6:01 service to Paris this morning was cancelled. The 6:31 did go ahead. It was about half an hour late. And now there are hundreds of people snaking their way around a queue, waiting and hoping that they can get on a train at one point. Suitcases in hand. Oh my gosh, I can see some ski bags over there as well. People from all over the world here telling me this morning, including from Australia, that the past 24 hours have been very expensive.
Our train was cancelled like at 10 a.m. in the morning already. So I rebooked it to 1 o'clock, and then we came in the station and they told us there are no trains, but we literally rebooked it 5 minutes before they cancelled everything. So we had to rebook again.
I don't know about no delays until now. I'm scared now.
And yesterday's issues, Henry, continued into the night as well as Eurostar tried to get some services up and running. There were some passengers who even reported being stranded on a train for some 6 hours with the power shut off. Francis Collings says his train from St Pancras to Paris ground to a halt at around 9:15 p.m. just before they entered the tunnel.
The power was turned off. So we have lighting, but it's low lighting. But this seems to have affected the toilets, which don't seem to want to flush. We're getting information, but it does seem to be a little bit all over the place. The staff, who are very attentive, don't really know entirely what's going on. I don't really understand where the fault is, where we're going, when or how. We could do with more information. There's a bit of an information vacuum, even if they're saying more or less the same thing every half an hour, keeping us updated what's happening.
The advice today is to check the status of your train with some delays and last-minute cancellations expected, with desperate passengers here, of course, wondering if they'll ring in the new year with their friends and family as planned.
Thank you very much, Fraser. Fraser Knight, LBC's reporter at St Pancras Station. Straight to LBC's travel editor, Joanne Webb, who joins me. Fraser touched on it then. Joanne, what is the current advice and the current state of play? Morning.
Yeah, good morning, Henry. So as Fraser said, the 6:01 to Paris was cancelled this morning. The 6:31 has gone, so it's on its way to France, but it was delayed. So far, the 7:31 seems to be going as normal, but there's a lot of people trying to travel after the chaos yesterday. So lots of people are going to be rebooked onto the trains today, if at all possible. So the trains are going to be extremely busy. And of course, they're extremely busy anyhow for this time of year. Now, it's not just Eurostar which are affected, it's also the Eurotunnel as well. They're saying there are delays at Folkestone of about an hour, but coming back from Calais to Folkestone, there are delays of about 6 hours, so more problems on the French side. But unfortunately, if you are travelling on either the Eurostar or the Eurotunnel, expect delays. Eurotunnel are saying to arrive at your normal time, even though there are delays, because they're obviously trying to sort everybody out and get everyone over to France. So the advice is to check before you travel. And obviously, if you are delayed, try and stay patient, try and stay calm. They are trying to get everyone over to France if it's going to be possible.
Sage advice. Thank you. Joanne Webb is LBC's travel editor with the very latest there. If you were affected by what happened yesterday or your plans have been impacted today, I would very much like to hear from you. 0345 6060973. I doubt they're listening, but did you read about Lizette and Michael Foot? Not that Michael Foot, who said their vows on the Grand Terrace at 4 p.m. at a champagne bar. They got... Why would you get married at a railway station? I find railway stations... I mean, Euston's the worst, but I find them so stressful. Why you'd want to get married there, I have no idea. But if you were affected, I would like to hear from you this morning. We'll take your views on that also.
A man from Afghanistan has been arrested after a suspected crowbar attack on five people at a hospital on Merseyside. I'm LBC's Chris Chambers with the details.
Latest from Merseyside. Next, 7:30 the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Hundreds of passengers have been stuck on Eurostar services overnight after a major power outage. Officials say they're trying to fix the issue in the Channel Tunnel, but plan to run a full service today. Thousands of officers will be out on the streets of Sydney for New Year's Eve after a terror attack on Bondi Beach. 15 people were killed in a shooting there earlier this month. And a new fleet of ambulances has been announced to strengthen the front line of the NHS. Officials say more than 500 have been distributed across England, costing more than £75 million. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, a high of 8 degrees.
I'm Tom Swarbrick. Thank you for your calls throughout the year on LBC.
Because our young girls approach these foreign guys.
So it's up to the girls to not approach people who they think might be foreign. What is that girl meant to... don't laugh, you despicable man. Why are you blaming a 15-year-old girl?
Living as a woman doesn't make you a woman.
I trust people to be an expert in their own gender. If someone has been living as a woman for 15 years...
What does that mean, living as a woman?
I don't really know how I can answer the question again.
It's not about timeline.
Because
it's
you not said about 90 calendar. Days, Mr. Booker. The President said 90 days.
Don't let me answer the question and don't interrupt me.
I'll choose when I speak. Please carry on.
Then this interview is terminated.
I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
On Booking.com, it's easy to book your holiday home. And thanks to flexible cancellation, there's no more...
Lodge is all booked, folks. Mm. Oh, Kaz and Rob are coming now. Oh.
With Booking.com, you're free to be flexible.
Oh, easy.
So you can go from home to holiday home with no dramas.
Bigger place booked.
On Booking.com, finding a holiday home is easy.
And relax.
Booking.com. Booking.com. Yeah.
Terms apply. Available on selected properties.
Sail into 2026 and save 15% when you book early. Pastries in Paris, wine tasting in Bordeaux, skiing in Chamonix. Your European adventure starts here with P&O ferries from Dover to Calais. Book early for 2026 and save 15% off standard fares for long breaks. Book now at poferries.com. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Travel without the travel.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play.
Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honeypot Bears, and four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood, and Cafes!
Nuthatch Adventure Park. Book now at nuthatch.com.
Henry Riley on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:34 the time. Good morning. Henry Riley with you here on LBC. We're talking this hour about the probation service and the state it is in. The highest number since records began in terms of, it's almost 900 serious crimes recorded in the last year committed by offenders who are under the supervision of probation after being released from prison. What, if anything, is to be done by that? More calls in a moment. 0345 6060 973. I'd also like to hear if you have been impacted. Maybe you were impacted yesterday, or you for the coming days have been affected by, as we were discussing with Fraser Knight and Joanne Webb, the rail passengers who now have been told not to travel for New Year after the chaos on the Eurostar there. First, though, let's talk business. Russ Mould is Investment Director at AJ Bell. And I think, bonjour, Russ, you join us from France because you've also been affected.
Bonjour, Henry. So, yeah, I can give you a first-person account. So we were trying to get back from Lille yesterday after a mini break there, and all of the trains were eventually cancelled. And right now I'm talking to you from Lyon, a three-hour train journey south, and we're hoping to get a flight. We got a flight booked out of Lyon back to London Gatwick for this evening. But certainly when the first announcements came out, you could see quite literally there was myself, my wife, and two late teens looking at routes, how we could get home. Which airport could we get to by train? Would we need an overnight stay in a hotel? Could we get a hotel? And you could see the prices for the hotels and the planes ticking higher and higher, literally within minutes. It was quite an intriguing experience. And the route that we eventually came up with was via Lyon. And I think the total cost is about £1,500. So Eurostar and my insurer will be hearing from me shortly.
I'm sure they will. They won't want to mess with Russ Mould. and more generally, I mean, it is just at this time of year as well, where people are relying on going back and forth. It is a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with the tunnel where you don't have that many routes going through the system. The Eurostar company saying there was a power failure and then a failed train in the tunnel, which eventually shut the whole thing off. I've had a look at the network, the Eurostar website this morning. There are 2 of 7 trains scheduled to run at the moment between London, Lille and Brussels, 6 of 8 between London and Paris-Gare du Nord. So they are getting it back. But looking at what's on their website right now, there isn't a full service with every scheduled train running until the 2nd of January.
Front page of the Times, Russ, if I can move you to that, warning about investment in Britain. We lag behind with the lowest investment across the G7. Why is that?
Yeah, it's a study from the Office for National Statistics and the Organisation and the OECD, and there are a number of different moving parts here. It looks as if public investment, government-backed spending through, say, the National Wealth Fund, is going up. But private investment seems to be lagging, and various business pressure groups and business groups are saying, well, that's partly due to imminent changes in the business rates. We've had employer confidence knocked by increased wages, the Employment Rights Bill, and higher energy costs are a constant bugbear as well. So the government would argue it's doing its bit. Private companies are saying, well, we're probably holding back. And the Chancellor will say infrastructure projects take time to bring benefits. And also, this is a situation that isn't new. The UK has been bottom of the G7 for a little bit. So it's not just an immediate thing, but there'll be lots of people out there saying the government came in with a growth budget plan, a growth plan, and certainly growth wasn't top of the agenda in the last budget.
And can we talk lastly, why is now a good time for people to get on and book their train tickets?
You're taking the mickey now, aren't you?
just to wrap it in.
This is nothing to do with Eurostar. This is the fourth consecutive year of a government-backed scheme called the Great British Rail Sale, offering deeply discounted off-peak train fares. It's to try and get people back on the train, because apparently a lot of people haven't bothered since the pandemic. Also give tourism a bit of a boost during the quieter winter months, and help people with the cost of tickets, which can be expensive. So they're offering up some very, very deeply discounted off-peak fares between mid-January and the middle of March.
Thank you, Russ. Russ Mould is Investment Director at AJ Bell. Take care to you too. 7:38 is the time. Aaron is in Portsmouth. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
Hello.
I just
I wanted to give you some feedback on probation. I work in criminal justice, so unfortunately, your previous call is an altogether regular occurrence in terms of experiential conditions on release for a lot of prisoners. I think it would be wrong to lay all the blame at probation's door because, particularly in London, 31 out of 32 boroughs, they have less than 50% probation officer resource. But that said, there are significant structural, managerial and operational issues that could be managed a lot better by probation. They don't attend meetings to discuss risk. When they do, this is pre-release, when they do, they're unprepared. I've seen a lot of, regularly, I see paperwork where the release conditions are incorrect or contradictory. Senior management that I have to deal with are just not recognising the issue and just look to be covering themselves and trying to mitigate and explain away problems without responsibility. It's really, really poor. It's a slow car crash and it is putting people at risk. So I'm shocked that we're not hearing more of catastrophic incidents, to be perfectly honest with you.
We are starting to hear more, aren't we? It seems like it's a sort of problem that is we're sort of hearing a lot more about it in the media, for example. What is to be done, in your view? I know it's not as simple as a sort of silver bullet, but what would you like to see changed, Aaron?
They have to go into a crisis management mode, which I don't think they're accepting or recognising, and they've got to learn how to prioritise and go back to the seeds of this lying in the deconstruction under the Conservative government many, many years ago, which absolutely caused chaos. And it got rid of a lot of experience and brought in a lot of unexperienced people who don't know how to manage risk and don't have that day-to-day knowledge. That has seriously damaged the service, and I think you're looking at a generational turnaround. I think you're looking at 10 to 15 years to get probation working anywhere near where it needs to work. There are serious management issues at the top of probation around quality, experience, attitude. It's poor. It's really poor.
And everyone who works in that field that I speak to does paint a similarly bleak picture, it has to be said. Thank you very much, Aaron. Appreciate it. Aaron there in Portsmouth. Bernie in Kent says, I'm not standing up for reoffending criminals, but if prison is all they know, once outside, maybe they feel lost and lonely. Why can't the prison service offer to help to get reoffenders to help them survive outside prison and to stay out? Pete says, Ari Luke Littler, we talk about this later on, you shouldn't bite the hand that feeds you. Never upset your audience. Alex says, in fact, I'll read Alex's in a little bit. And Andy says, so bored of hearing Labour being panned for these issues. It's taken 14 years to decimate the criminal justice system, and it will take longer than 18 months to fit. I actually don't think I've mentioned, other than the David Lammy situation in the House of Commons, I don't think I've blamed Labour at all. I'm saying that it's been an issue for some time. But thank you, Andy. Nonetheless, 7:42 is the time. Let's go to Merseyside. An Afghan has been arrested after five were attacked with a crowbar in hospital, is the headline in some of the newspapers. A 20-year-old man has been arrested after allegedly attacking five people. Chris Chambers is LBC's Northwest correspondent and joins me with the very latest. Morning, Chris.
Morning, Henry. This happened around midday yesterday at Newton Community Hospital in Newton, the Willows on Merseyside, a smallish hospital which doubles up as a GP practice. Police were called after reports of a man having come into the hospital and who then began behaving aggressively, having been told he wasn't able to have an appointment. At this stage, he was asked to leave, but it's understood he then became agitated and aggressive. He caused a damage to the counter at reception and went on to assault several people inside with what's believed to have been a crowbar. Now, five people suffered injuries. They were treated on site by paramedics. None of those injuries serious, fortunately. The police have said they located the man quickly, that he is a 20-year-old man who was originally from Afghanistan, and he is now being held on suspicion of five counts of Section 18 wounding, affray, and also criminal damage.
Thank you, Chris. Chris Chambers, LBC's Northwest correspondent with the latest. This comes in, says, please don't mention my name, so I won't. From the moment you apply for a post as a probation officer to the day you are appointed, it can take up to 6 months. The retention rate is problematic. Many officers have staff who are at most of 4 years' experience. Staff see high-risk offenders for less than 1 hour a week. We only see a snapshot of their lives, and many serious further offences could not have been predicted. Again, this one asks me to keep them anonymous, so I will. I work in probation. We can't recruit. The vetting takes months. The money is poor. We haven't had a pay rise. The risk to staff is high. And this year, two colleagues have been stabbed and seriously injured. Staff are under enormous pressure. No staff will speak for fear of losing their jobs. And this from Alfred says, when Labour came into government, the prisons minister, and you're referring to Lord Timpson, of course, James Timpson, was appointed and paraded as the best person ever to sort out our prisons. He was interviewed regularly on LBC, but since the prisoner releases became big news, he's never been mentioned, at least interviewed. I did actually go to a prison with him for a piece. I went to HMP High Point, but you're right, he hasn't been sort of regularly heard in the media, has he? And David says, murder, rape and dangerous driving. We have had criminals and 14 years of Tory rule and austerity that have wrecked the probation service. I worked for the probation system before the Tories privatised it, and it worked well, says David. Your calls on the probation service in a moment. Plus, I would, again, as I say, like to hear from you if you're affected by the travel chaos, the chaos that we saw. Well, I say it's St Pancras. It sort of originated there, but seemed to spread across most of Europe, as we were hearing from poor old Ross Mould, who's stuck in France there. 0345 6060 973, the number to call. Plus,
having a modern ambulance fleet is absolutely essential for making sure we improve our urgent and emergency care services.
A new fleet of ambulances have been unveiled, which will help strengthen the frontline response to health emergencies this winter. This as, of course, being New Year's Eve, an extremely busy day for the service. We'll speak with the chief executive of the London Ambulance Service next. 7:45 the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Hundreds of passengers have been stuck on Eurostar services overnight after a major power outage. Thousands of officers will be on the streets of Sydney for New Year's Eve after the Bondi Beach terror attack. And a new fleet of ambulances has been announced to strengthen the front line of the NHS. LBC weather, a cold start across the UK, staying dry with lots of sunshine for most, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 is closed clockwise from junction 12 at the M3 to 13 at Staines. And that's because of an oil spillage. There was a fire as well earlier. The motorway is closed. Obviously, this is causing big problems if you're trying to get to Heathrow Airport. There are long delays on the approach. Also, delays on the M25 anti-clockwise at junction 24 at Potter's Bar. And that's where a car has broken down. Very busy on the M4 eastbound between junction 6 at Slough and 5 at Langley. And that's because a car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. Eurostar and Eurotunnel services remain severely disrupted, and that was after the problems in the tunnel yesterday.
This is LBC.
It's time to celebrate. No, not New Year. It's DFS winter sale time. Shake, shake, shake. With savings on a huge range of stylish sofas and beds, plus 4 years interest-free credit on everything. Let your bum find its thing in the DFS Winter Sale. Shake on down to a store near you. DFS, what's your thing?
This is LBC.
Hello, this is my mum's work phone. I've re-recorded her voicemail because I'm 8 and I've never had a holiday where she hasn't been distracted by work. This hotel has 2 pools and 3 water slides and she promised to take me shopping. So, before you leave her a message, maybe don't.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Your happy new year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by New Year's Day, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash, you must enter by New Year's Day at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Charles says, you're looking at the symptoms, not the cause of early release criminals. Lock them up if prisons are overcrowded. Shame, just don't care. Let them rot. Yeah, but we haven't got enough spaces. All very well saying, we're going to be in a situation where we don't have spaces for people who commit new offences. So I sort of understand where you're coming from, but I don't think it's as easy to say that. Alfred blames Chris Grayling. Oh, my goodness, we're going back to the Coalition, are we? It appears the Daily Mail and others have forgotten they supported the Conservatives to cut all investments. They supported the austerity, whilst George Osborne is off to his 30th job since leaving politics. The country's toast. Okay. And this from Alison says about reporting to Crime Stoppers, and you can help people find help when it comes to being homeless and in trouble with the law. Yeah, you don't want to be in a situation, as our caller Danny was basically hinting, where because you are sleeping rough, you're committing crimes in order to sort of get a roof over your head or to be looked after. And Kevin, on the subject of travel, says, we're waiting to get on our train from Folkestone, 8:22. Well, you've got about half an hour. We can see it, busy as you'd expect, but staff being very helpful. Happy New Year. Well, I was hoping for a bit more jeopardy there. But thank you. Nonetheless, if you were affected by the chaos that we saw at St Pancras yesterday, but also across sort of Europe, then do give me a call. Or if you have views on probation, 0345 6060973, the number to call. 10 to 8 the time. Some good news. A new fleet of ambulances have been unveiled, which will help strengthen the frontline response to health emergencies this winter. Now, this is costing more than £75 million, and it will see more than 500 ambulances distributed across England. Officials say that the new fleet is the biggest upgrade to the NHS ambulance fleet in recent years. Jason Killens is chief executive of the LAS, the London Ambulance Service, and joins me now. Jason, thank you. Without getting too technical, what's so special about these new ambulances? Good morning.
Well, good morning. I wouldn't say there's anything necessarily very special about them, but they're new ambulances. And of course, what that means is that our fleet is more modern, more reliable. It's off the road less, and that means we're able to respond to patients more quickly and provide a modern workplace environment for our people.
And for patients, they will see a material difference with these new and improved ambulances, will they, do you think, Mr. Killens?
Well, it certainly, what it does help us do is reduce what we call out of service. So this is where a vehicle is off the road, it's not available to respond. Our fleet generally will be replaced when we get to about 5 or 7 years of age. And of course, you know, your listeners will realise that, you know, our vehicles are on the road 24 hours a day. They're responding, you know, braking and accelerating quickly. So there's lots of wear and tear on the vehicle. So a new modern fleet is essential for us to be able to provide quick and timely responses to patients.
The week ending December the 14th saw 28% of patients arriving by ambulance at hospitals in England waiting for at least 30 minutes to be handed over to A&E teams. That is down on the week before, I have to say, but of course it still is affecting an awful lot of people. What can be done to mitigate that, Mr. Killens?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, far too many patients across the country do wait too long in the back of an ambulance to get into an emergency department. That said, there has been quite a lot of improvement in recent months. I mean, a good example of this would be in the southwest of England, where they've been pretty bad, what we call handover delays or an inability for our clinicians to hand over emergency departments. That's improved significantly in recent months and has been sustained. So there is good news across the country, albeit in some places, in a small number of emergency departments now, there is still work to do.
The guys and girls who work under you will have a pretty busy night, the busiest night today. I'm grateful that you've joined us so early, because I imagine you won't be getting an awful lot of sleep as well. Talk us through the challenges of New Year's Eve, because
well, that's,
it's, I mean, yeah, it's that's a huge right. night for you, isn't it?
It is, and I will be joining them later. So I'm looking forward to being out in central London with our teams that are out for the event tonight. I mean, for us here in London, we'll be getting to a point just after midnight where we're taking a 999 call every couple of seconds. We'll be dealing with something like 600 or 700 an hour in the first couple of hours of January the 1st. That's a significant workload, obviously, for us. So it is the busiest day, busiest night of the year for us. We've got additional teams on duty right across the capital. And of course, ambulance services across the UK will also be doing the same. And that's to ensure that we can respond as quickly as we can to the most significant illnesses and injuries we see tonight.
Well, credit to you and your colleagues. I was reading a few days ago, there was a piece with one of your call handlers talking about the busy flu season and about getting sort of short shrift on the phone, if I can put it that way, from frustrated people. We know that many of your colleagues on the front line also do receive physical and verbal abuse. I just wondered what the state of play is with again the people working under you, and tonight, I suppose, unfortunately, will be no different.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, thank you for drawing attention to it. We've had a campaign over this month. All we want for Christmas is respect, and this is because we've seen a rise in the number of occasions of violence and aggression against our people, either our call handlers or our clinicians on the streets. We know that 40% of all of those assaults or incidents of violence and aggression involve drink or drugs. And of course, tonight we've got lots of parties going on. So our request to communities and those which are calling ambulances tonight is very simple. Treat us with respect. We can't look after you and provide great care if you're abusing our people. Our clinicians certainly have should be able to go home at the end of their shift without fear of being assaulted at work. And equally, our call handlers also should be able to do the same without threats of violence against them.
If we go back to wait times for people waiting to get into A&E, a story we touched on yesterday was a warning from the president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine about corridor care within hospitals, saying that it has become normalised. Again, your thoughts on that, because it does seem slightly surprising, if not crazy, that we're in a situation where we do accept this is the norm, or was that always the case?
Well, I certainly don't think we accept it as the norm. It is true to say that
you
there
do have some
cases.
Hospitals employing people specifically for corridor care.
Well, I think in some places that is true, but of course it's not universal right across every emergency department in the country. What we would say is clearly we would support the fact that we would want all patients to be treated with dignity in a setting which is appropriate to their condition and illness, and corridors clearly aren't suitable for that. That said, equally, the back of an ambulance is also not an appropriate setting for someone to receive, you know, care over a long period of time. And these are consequences or kind of symptoms, if you like, of a broader issue about flow through the hospital, through the emergency department and through the hospital. And that's about making sure we can get people into the hospital quickly when we need to, but also get them out of a bed and back into communities when they're fit and able to do so.
And just lastly, there's a story that is featured in all of the newspapers today because we had figures out of people turning up to A&E. If I could ask you, Mr. Killens, millions of people turning up to A&E departments in England for minor ailments, including coughs, blocked nose and hiccups, that health leaders say lays bare the failure to give patients prompt access to primary care. Of course, if people are concerned, they should go to A&E. I'm not discouraging that at all. But there is a limit to people coming with minor ailments, isn't there?
Well, the emergency department or the emergency ambulance service is not the place for hiccups and minor ailments, as you say. And of course, patients, people who have got those minor ailments can access care and advice either through 111 or through the Pharmacy First scheme, which is where pharmacists can treat and indeed offer medications for a range of minor conditions.
Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. Jason Killens is Chief Executive of the London Ambulance Service. 500 ambulances costing more than £75 million distributed across the NHS and England. And, of course, a busy night for Mr. Killens and his colleagues, with it being New Year's Eve. Phil is in Ferndown in Dorset to talk not ambulances but probation. Morning, Phil.
Morning, Henry. I finished 2 years probation in October, and there's just no resources. There's nothing to support people who come out. There was nothing on offer. I was really fortunate because I came out to a family and support, and I had a home to come to. But I was in prison with people who didn't know where they were going to be living, or not living, but even just staying the night before, you know, the day or 2 days before they were released. It is absolute shambles. It really is. The whole 2 years I was on probation, it was just ticking the boxes, really. That was all. Everything I'd done, and I'd done off my own back, I went and got a job, which is no easy feat when you've got a record, as you can imagine. They don't even offer you like, access to a gym or anything. Well, I was. I mean, this is subjective experience, of course. I mean,
access to a gym, did you say?
Yeah, not even a gym or anything. Just, you know, something to do.
Are you talking about in prison?
No, out of prison. When you're out. Even 10 years ago, you used to be able to get a gym membership so you could go and, you know, do a bit of exercise.
You could have joined a gym, though, Phil, couldn't you?
I could have, and I did. But, as I said, I'm very fortunate. I came out and I still have resources. Most of the people I spoke to, they've been in prison, you know, for a few years. They've got nothing to come out to. They've got no money, don't know where they're going to be living, no family support, nothing. There's nothing there. So this bang people up and, you know, teach them a lesson, let them rot. That's great, but then they come out and there's nothing to come out to.
Yeah, well, and that has been what we've heard from virtually all of the callers this morning. Phil, thank you very much. We are going to move on. Coming up.
Well, Mr. Prime Minister, thank you very much. It's an honour. We're going to have a continued, maybe a better relationship than ever before.
A poll today in the Daily Mirror says Brits want Keir Starmer to be more critical of Donald Trump. Do you agree? Plus...
Yes!
Yeah, sounds all right there. That was the moment Luke Littler beat Rob Cross. He was a contender for Sports Personality of the Year, but for some reason was booed at Ali Pally the other night. Why? And...
He serves as the shadow attorney general, he's in the shadow cabinet, and he's also trying to act for Roman Abramovich as a lawyer.
Is it a conflict of interest that the Conservative shadow attorney general, Lord Wolfson, is acting for sanctioned Russian billionaire Roman Abramovich? We'll take your views on that after the news at 8 on LBC.
On your radio... On the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Eurostar officials say they plan to run services as usual today, but are warning there could be delays of up to 6 hours. Thousands of passengers have been affected by the major power outage in the Channel Tunnel yesterday. LBC's Fraser Knight is at St Pancras International.
Hundreds have showed up, many quite early, hoping to get onto a train at some point, and they're now lined up, snaking their way around the whole of St Pancras station. New Year's plans on the continent... Of course, hanging in the balance.
Officials in Sydney say they're doing everything they can to protect people celebrating New Year's Eve after a deadly terror attack there. Two gunmen opened fire at people at a Hanukkah event on Bondi Beach earlier this month, killing 15. 3 million train tickets are going to be discounted as part of the government's Great British Rail Sale. Off-peak and advance fares have been lowered between the 13th of January and the 25th of March. Transport Minister Lord Hendy hopes it'll make train travel more affordable.
It's a great offer because the fares increase otherwise would have been 5.8%, which would have hurt people's budgets. But it's a good thing to do. Government's pleased to do it and it's making a real contribution to cutting the cost of living.
Ministers have also promised to freeze rail prices in England over the next year. A new fleet of ambulances has been announced to strengthen the front line of the NHS. Officials say more than 500 have been distributed across England, costing more than £75 million. It's said to be the biggest upgrade to the NHS ambulance fleet in recent years. Thieves have used a large drill to steal millions in a German bank heist. They took thousands of safety deposit boxes filled with money, gold and jewellery, thought to be worth €30 million. Gelsenkirchen police say the break-in was very professionally executed. And new figures show the British music industry has grown for the 11th year in a row. The British phonographic industry says it's down to new artists like Olivia Dean and Lola Young. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with lots of sunshine elsewhere and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026.
A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good morning, Henry Reilly with you here on LBC. 3 minutes past eight is the time. We're going to be talking this hour, the Shadow Attorney General's job with Roman Abramovich. Is that a conflict of interest? Your views on that next. Plus,
you guys pay for tickets and you're paying for my prize money, so thank you. Thank you for my money. Thank you for booing me. Thank you.
Oh dear, he was a contender for Sports Personality of the Year, yet on Monday night at Ali Pally, Luke Littler was booed. He plays again tomorrow. Will the same happen also?
A friend who bullies us is no longer a friend. And since bullies only respond to strength, now onward, I will be prepared to be much stronger. And the President should be prepared for that.
Hugh Grant or Keir Starmer? Which one do you think that was? That is Hugh Grant, of course, responding with the US president in Love Actually. Now a poll in the Daily Mirror says that Brits want the Prime Minister, want the government to be tougher on Trump. We'll discuss. And
let it be.
Who plays Ringo Starr's wife in a forthcoming film about the Beatles says that she can't name all four members of the Fab Four. Why on earth? I mean, she's been living under a rock.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Morning to you. 4 minutes past eight is the time. A story that my colleague Sheila Fogarty spoke about on her programme yesterday. Indeed, she interviewed the Justice Minister, Jake Richard. I'm going to play you a little clip of what he said in just a moment. Kemi Badenoch is under fire as the Tory shadow minister, he's shadow attorney general, acts for Russian oligarch. Again, that is how The Guardian are portraying it. Kemi Badenoch under pressure to act on the revelations that her shadow attorney general is representing the Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich, despite the UK sanctions against him. Now, this is Lord Wolfson, David Wolfson, who is a Tory peer, and he's part of the legal team representing Abramovich as he attempts to recover billions of frozen assets that he owns in the Channel Islands, in Jersey, to be precise. Now, Roman Abramovich is caught up in a legal battle with the government of Jersey after they launched an investigation into the source of more than £5 billion worth of assets linked to him that he held there. Now, ministers have said the case in Jersey, stay with me here, is delaying the release of £2.5 billion. So if you remember, when Roman Abramovich sold Chelsea, part of that was meant to go towards effectively some of the people who have suffered after Russia's invasion with Ukraine, although Roman Abramovich said it should go to all the people that have suffered, i.e. not just people in the country that was invaded, but also Russia as well, the aggressor, if you like. Now, this is not just, I hear you saying, oh, of course it's in The Guardian. Well, it's also in The Times as well. Their headline, Shadow Attorney General's job with Abramovich, indefensible. He's being criticised for this involvement, and they again spell out exactly what is wrong. So he is part of the legal team representing Roman Abramovich, who used to own Chelsea, in his legal fight with the Jersey government. Now, so in Jersey, more than £5.3 billion of Abramovich's assets have been frozen by the Jersey courts because of a sort of complex legal dispute. Abramovich's representatives say that about £1.4 billion raised from the sale of Chelsea can't be released because of legal proceedings. And now the Tory shadow attorney general is involved in those legal proceedings. It all does seem quite messy, but I suppose if you boil it down, should the shadow attorney general, a senior, one of the most senior Conservatives under Kemi Badenoch, be acting for a man who is a sanctioned Russian billionaire, Roman Abramovich? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. First, as I mentioned, the Justice Minister, Jake Richard, spoke with my LBC colleague, Sheila Fogarty, yesterday.
Lord Wolfson has a decision to make. He serves as the shadow attorney general. He's in the shadow cabinet. He is part of the Conservative Party's policy-making process. And he's also trying to act for Roman Abramovich as a lawyer. And in my view, that is completely contradictory. He is unable to complete both those tasks appropriately because there is a direct conflict of interest. The key point here is the UK government, along with international partners, are trying to recover assets from Putin's Russia to help with the war effort. Now, that is a policy that this government has. It's a policy that lots of governments have. We're not sure what the Conservative Party's policy is, but it surely cannot be right that the Shadow Attorney General, a key and senior figure in the top Tory team, is also working for Roman Abramovich, as well as advising Kemi Badenoch on these issues. She must take action. This is a matter of her leadership and ensure that he is no longer in this position, or he should stand down from his role advising Roman Abramovich.
Jake Richards speaking with Sheila Fogarty. He, to remind you, is a Justice Minister. That was on LBC yesterday. The Conservatives, by the way, they accuse Labour of rank hypocrisy, saying the Conservatives led the way on support for Ukraine and we remain committed to their cause. The party said to suggest anything else is just Labour sinking to new depths. Now, noting Lord Wolfson is not in government, so it's not necessarily a direct conflict of interest. Given he is the shadow Attorney General, i.e. wants to be the next Attorney General, the most senior law officer, then is this hypocrisy? Should he be working with Roman Abramovich, a man sanctioned by the UK government, by the very government that he wants to be a member of? In a moment, we'll speak with Christopher Ford from the Ukraine Solidarity Campaign. But first, staying with Labour MPs, Joe Powell is the Labour MP for Kensington and Bayswater, where Roman Abramovich has frozen property. And Joe Powell joins me on the line now. The Conservatives say, Mr. Powell, that this is rank hypocrisy. If you look at the previous jobs of Richard Hermer, for example, and Keir Starmer. What do you say to that?
Well, Richard Hermer was not a shadow minister when he was a practicing barrister for many of the cases that the Conservatives have cited. The key difference here is you have the shadow Attorney General who provides legal advice to Kemi Badenoch, to the shadow cabinet, to other Conservative Party shadow ministers, acting on two sides of the same issue. It's inconceivable that he is not aware of probably the biggest single legal case currently undertaken by the British government, which is to recover these £2.5 billion from the sale of Chelsea from Roman Abramovich, and at the same time acting privately for Roman Abramovich in Jersey. That is a direct conflict of interest.
But surely if he is helping, and I'm playing devil's advocate here to some extent, Joe, but if he is working with Roman Abramovich and he does end up sort of successfully settling that case in Jersey, then the funds will be released quicker.
Well, I think that is a stretch, Henry, because we know that this individual, Roman Abramovich, a former constituent of my match, is an extremely litigious individual. We know that he has a long track record. It's not just about Chelsea. It's about silencing journalists. It's about avoiding tax. If you believe the BBC and the Guardian story earlier this year, up to £1 billion of UK tax. And these things are all connected. The idea that you can separate out Roman Abramovich's interests and have parcels of different legal cases across the world and have legal representatives who might not be aware of the others is simply for the birds. So having someone sitting as the top legal advisor to the Conservative Party and also sitting privately for a sanctioned Russian oligarch is indefensible.
Should it just be the case that if you are, say, in the House of Lords, or if you are an MP, or indeed more sort of aptly in the shadow cabinet, then you just shouldn't act for clients?
Look, if he wants to be a barrister and wants to choose whatever clients he wants, and we have an important principle of a right to legal defence, and we have the cab rank rule where we're very clear that we don't judge barristers by their client's character or record.
It seems like you are, respectfully, Mr. Powell, you are judging him by the client he's with.
Then he needs to make a choice. Does he want to be shadow attorney general, or does he want to act for people like Roman Abramovich? Wow. Because I've sat in briefings with the shadow foreign secretary, Priti Patel, where she has said to me, I want this money to be released. I've heard senior Conservative backbenchers in the parliament. I've raised this Chelsea case probably more times than any other member of parliament since the last general election. And I thought there was a cross-party consensus on this. Mm. So if Kemi Badenoch is receiving legal advice from Lord Wolfson on Roman Abramovich, Russia, sanctions, tax policy, he needs to recuse himself from all of those discussions because he can't possibly be impartial.
Is there a bit of hypocrisy here, though, Joe? Because during the general election campaign, your party were furious when the Conservatives went after Keir Starmer, Lord Hermer. I mean, it was brought up that Keir Starmer acted for Abu Qatata. He acted for Hizbut Tahrir, the sanctioned group. Terrorist group, by the way, prescribed in the UK. And you quite rightly said at the time, well, we don't judge people by their clients, that he is the cab rank rule. And now you're opening yourself up to people pointing out that, yes, Lord Hermer did act on behalf of Gerry Adams, for example.
But, Henry, there's a very clear difference. Lord Hermer was not in the shadow cabinet. He was not shadow attorney general, and he was not providing legal advice to the Labour Party leader or Labour Party shadow ministers. Lord Hermer is the most senior sitting Conservative on legal issues in this country. He is the shadow attorney general, and he is simultaneously sitting in shadow cabinet meetings, providing legal advice to the leader of the opposition, and at the same time providing legal advice in the other hours of his day to Roman Abramovich. I simply don't understand how you can possibly do those two things at the same time. And this is not to denigrate barristers who rightly give legal defence to people that they may privately feel like are pretty unscrutable individuals. That is the basis of a strong legal system. But he has to make a choice.
Thank you for your time, Joe. Always appreciated. Joe Powell is the Labour MP for Kensington and Bayswater, where, as he mentioned, Roman Abramovich was a former constituent of his. To Christopher Ford, Secretary of the Ukraine Solidarity Campaign, who attended the Nathan Gill trial and sentencing. To remind you, he was the former Reform UK leader in Wales, I should say, and has now been sentenced for his involvement with Russia and taking bribes. Christopher joins me now. Your view on whether this is a conflict of interest, as Labour are suggesting, Christopher. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, yes, it is a conflict of interest, and let's not lose touch with the concrete reality of who we're talking about. Roman Abramovich isn't just some rich individual who can hire a very good legal team, which he has. He has already been sanctioned by the European Union because of his close ties to Vladimir Putin. He has generated substantial revenue for the Russian state. He appealed to European Union sanctions and he lost in court. He's sanctioned by the UK for the same reasons, for his close ties to the Putin regime. Mm. Let's remind ourselves, there's a human element here. Putin is wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes. That is a deportation and transfer of thousands of Ukrainian children. That is child abduction and abuse on an industrial scale. So we have our shadow attorney general who advises the opposition, representing someone who is aligned with a wanted war criminal who is currently waging war on a sovereign and independent nation who we support as a country, and a regime who is waging hybrid war on this country who threatens our democracy. Now, is there a conflict of interest? I think that the Tory party response in this is just a smear itself to close down public debate on this issue. But there is a clear public interest. You can't be the shadow attorney general representing a Putin-aligned oligarch against the country,
well,
essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, is it? Can I ask you...
It's not a question of ideal, is it? It's a question of morals, I would say.
but when we look at the cab... I mean, you're talking about morals, which don't actually tend to apply to the cab rank rule when it comes to... And look, you can talk about the conflict of interest separately, but if he was not a shadow attorney general and he was a lawyer, I mean, he is still... You can understand why he's acting for this client.
But he is the shadow attorney general.
No, sure, but I'm saying if he wasn't...
Would it... lawyer. He's not just any other barrister who simply picked up a case where sometimes people have to represent repugnant individuals facing terrible allegations. He is the shadow attorney general of a party, frankly, who have a questionable record in terms of connections to Russian wealth, which began to cease in 2022. Prior to that, they allowed this capital to become a sewage pipe of Russian oligarchic money. So let's not forget that. They buried the Russia report. We cannot allow to go back to a situation of normalisation of business as usual with the Putin regime. Let's not forget it. Every single day, Ukrainians are being killed. They have no right of appeal. Those kidnapped children have no right of appeal. The women who have been sexually abused have no right of appeal. So this is rank hypocrisy. Kemi Badenoch has to make her mind up. Either she's got to get his resignation or sack him. And morals do matter in a situation where democracy is threatened by such authoritarians as Putin.
Yeah, well, and your point has been made, and I understand it, and I'm keen to know if listeners agree. Thank you. Christopher Ford is Secretary of the Ukraine Solidarity Campaign, who, as he mentioned as well, attended the Nathan Gill trial and sentencing. Do you think this is a conflict of interest for the Shadow Attorney General, the most senior legal advisor to the Conservatives, to be acting on behalf of a sanctioned Russian billionaire? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. 8:70 in the time, though, the news with Lottie Morley.
Eurostar officials say they plan to run services as usual today after a major power outage in the Channel Tunnel. Officials in Sydney say they're doing everything they can to protect people celebrating New Year's Eve after the Bondi Beach terror attack. And 3 million train tickets are going to be discounted as part of the government's Great British Rail sale. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise to junction 12 at the M3. It's following a fuel spillage and only two lanes are open. Also delays on the M4 eastbound at junction 6 at Slough because a car broke down earlier. It's just been recovered, but it's still very busy. And the M1's very slow northbound to junction 14 at Milton Keynes. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. On the trains, well, the problems continue for Greater Anglia and Stansted Express. They can't go to and from Liverpool Street, and still delays and cancellations for Eurostar and Eurotunnel after the power problem and overhead wire problems yesterday, and no service on the Bakerloo line, and that's because of a track problem.
This is LBC.
Shout out to the savvy ones tuned in across the UK.
Who? Me?
Yeah, you. The ones who know a good deal when they see one. Like the house proud who protect their manor from broken branches to burst pipes. The dog walkers who take the lead when comparing pet cover for their pampered pooches. And the drivers with breakdown cover belting out those power ballads. Here's to all of you making smart choices and finding your insurance at Go.compare. Now that's savvy.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
Hello, you've reached the voicemail of Holiday Rebecca. She's a bit like work Rebecca, except her stress headache is gone. Her frown lines have faded, and instead of hunching over a desk with a meal deal, she's enjoying fresh, hand-rolled pasta for lunch. If you require work, Rebecca, please try again in about 10 days.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
Your Happy New Year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by New Year's Day, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash, you must enter by New Year's Day at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:21 is the time. Look, I know there's a lot of intricacies, and I mean, frankly, it's difficult to get your head around this Roman Abramovich story. But if you boil it down, the Shadow Attorney General is acting, while he's in that role, by the way, it's not like he's a sort of random lawyer. He is the Shadow Attorney General. He is the Conservatives' most senior legal advisor. He's acting for a sanctioned Russian oligarch, for a sanctioned Russian billionaire, Roman Abramovich, who has promised all of this money from the sale of Chelsea and from his frozen assets to go to, effectively, in a lot of cases, helping the war in Ukraine. And that may now be made more difficult because we have a pretty eminent lawyer from the Conservative Party acting on his behalf. We have the cab rank rule, which means you sort of take the first case and you don't judge or discriminate. But given he's in such a senior role, is that a conflict of interest? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Rod's in Barnet. Hi, Rod.
Oh, good morning to you, Henry.
Oh, good morning
to you.
Thanks
for taking my call.
It's all right.
Yeah, I don't see how you could act in two capacities. I don't think it really matters whether there is or there isn't a conflict of interest. It's about the optics, what it looks like, and the potential for a conflict of interest. How these people get themselves in these positions, it just astounds me.
It's not ideal, as I said earlier on to the guest, is it? It looks pretty poor. But I mean, noting that there is a difference because he is currently serving in that role. But if you look at some of the clients, I mean, Keir Starmer acting on behalf of the terrorist group Hizb ut-Tahrir, for example, or Abu Qatata, the cleric. I mean, should we really judge people by their clients?
No, you shouldn't judge people by their clients. But you can do one job or the other, not both.
Yes. And so what needs to happen to him? Do you think he'll end up... I know you're not a political... maybe you are, Rod, but do you think he'll resign?
No, of course he won't. He'll fight it, and that will be it, and it will all die death. But it's a distraction from all the other issues of the day that really matter, isn't it?
OK. Thank you very much, Rod, there in Barnet. Alex says, I worked for Roman Abramovich and his family for 4 years. He's one of the most generous person I've ever met. He gave millions to charity. When he sold Chelsea FC, he only took the money the club owed him. 2.5 billion was left over and he donated it to Ukraine. Well, I think there's still a dispute about the money going to Ukraine. The UK government has frozen this for no reason, says Alex. Okay, thank you. And John says, European leaders can't unfreeze Russian assets in Belgium, but politicians get all hot under the collar about an individual. And Charles says, the Labour MP you had on has drunk the Starmer Kool-Aid. He never answered about Starmer's past. And Derek says, what a joke. You want to ask your Prime Minister about being more critical of Donald Trump when he's done everything in his power to end the wars in Ukraine and Gaza, when he's sat on the fence and not done much to speak of. Well, we'll be talking more about this call, according to a poll, for people to, for Keir Starmer, I should say, to get sort of stronger when it comes to Donald Trump. John's in Enfield. Hi, John.
Oh, hello there. Yeah, so I just caught the back end of this report about hypocrisy. It is hypocrisy, you know, for this attorney to be backing, Abramovich is nothing but, Putin's arm, yeah? And in my view, Putin's probably the richest guy in the world, you know, because he controls all these oligarchs. His wealth actually makes Musk's wealth look like a shopkeeper, you know. There are reports that this guy is so rich.
Right.
I mean, I've seen reports that this guy's his wealth is like 76 trillion, you know. But
I don't know about... Really?
Yeah. If you're an oligarch, you don't say anything
against... 20 times the size of our economy.
Yeah, if you're an oligarch, you don't say anything against Putin, otherwise you'll find yourself off a building somewhere.
Yeah, if you're
a
critic,
The hypocrisy of Labour, yeah, is that this... Well, the number one, there's 180,000 war crimes so far reported against Putin in this war, right? Him hitting both residential... I mean, you know, residential areas and,
yes.
Schools and abdications, OK? 180,000 so far. This is by The Hague. They're going with Ukraine to actually, document all these crimes.
Yeah.
But the hypocrisy of Labour is the Ukraine war is actually being financed by China. Yeah. Without China, this war will be over. And Labour is about to sanction an aircraft carrier-size super embassy in the heart of London.
Oh, okay? Yeah. Well,
this is the hypocrisy of Labour.
The very controversial decision about in the... it's right by the Tower of London, I think, isn't it? This new super embassy, as has been spoken about. And I think it's going to be one of the big stories, actually, in the coming months. John, thank you in Enfield. Debbie in Epsom, you'll be next. First, though, other stories. Warning in The Guardian today. Beware of water. during New Year swims, the RNLI has warned, after we saw that tragedy play out. This was the disappearance of Matthew Upham, the 63-year-old, and another man during a Christmas Day swim in Devon at Budleigh Salterton. This warning comes from the RNLI, and Tony Wafer is Senior Water Safety Partner at the RNLI and joins me now. We'll just spell out your warning to people, because there are these traditions when it comes to swims at this time of year. What are you urging people to do, Tony? Morning.
Morning, Henry. I would like to just, first off, just extend our slight thoughts and prayers to the family and friends affected by last week's incident, and also thank our volunteer lifesavers throughout this festive period who go out 24/7. I wouldn't say it's a warning as such. I mean, festive periods, as you said, have been going on for many, many, many years, and they're a lot of fun. So I'm going to try and keep this really sort of simple for your listeners and give you four top tips, really, over the sort of coming days or sort of weeks. So really, go to an organised event. That's the number one. And they're really well run. They've got lots of safety cover, processes to keep you and your family and sort of friends safe in and around the water. And many of them support local and national charities like the RNLI. And if you can't go to an organised event, just go with a group, a small group of you. So that's safety in numbers, so to speak. The second top tip is go prepared. Apart from your sort of festive, sort of fancy dress, you might want to consider wearing a wetsuit underneath that to sort of help you keep a little bit warmer, a little bit more buoyant, and go high visibility. Like, you can wear one of these like high vis hats or caps, swim caps, and take a bit of a toe float, maybe a mobile phone in a waterproof bag. Third top tip, go slow and go shallow. I think I've defrosted my car this morning. It's pretty cold out there. The water around the UK is chilling off even further. It's about 8 degrees. It will induce something called a cold water shock, would take your breath away, literally. Just acclimatise slowly, and you don't go out your depths. You can still have a lot of fun in the shallows. And the fourth top tip is know what to do in an emergency. So if you get into trouble, or one of your listeners gets into trouble, just remember, float to live. So put your head back, ear submerged, spread your arms and legs, and try to float and breathe normally until help arrives. And if you see someone in trouble, as tempting it is to help, just call 999 or 112 and ask for the Coast Guard immediately. And if you've got something to throw to them that floats to hand, then that would really sort of help as well. So those are my four top tips.
Well, sound advice, sound tips. If people want to sort of are not sure of their swimming ability, how is best for them to sort of work that out? Is it best to be safe and not do it?
That's true, Tenry. I mean, if in doubt, stay out. This is the thing. Know your own limitations. Know your abilities. There's another day to be had. If you want to go to a pool, get some swimming lessons, etc. But as I said, go to an organised. If you want to join in the fun and join in the festivities and sort of support charities, go to an organised event and go shallow. Cold water can have a lot of like health benefits. I think there's some reports. You only have to go into your ankles to your knees to get those sort of benefits and join in the fun.
Thank you for your time. Tony Wafer is Senior Water Safety Partner at the RNLI, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. More calls on Roman Abramovich in a moment. Debbie, I'll be talking to you the other side of the news, where we'll also discuss...
Well, Mr. Prime Minister, thank you very much. It's an honour. We're going to have a continued, maybe a better relationship than ever before.
Were you a fan of that sort of cosy relationship between Donald Trump and Keir Starmer? Well, a poll in the Daily Mirror today, Brits want Keir Starmer to be more critical of Donald Trump, with many saying the US president's second term is bad for the UK. What approach should Keir Starmer take to the man in the Oval Office in 2026? 8:30 is the time. The news with Lottie Morley.
Eurostar passengers are being told to expect delays and cancellations after a power outage in the Channel Tunnel. Thousands of people have been affected already in the lead-up to New Year's Eve celebrations. All services were cancelled yesterday. Tributes to the victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack will be made at New Year's Eve celebrations in Sydney later. Officials say police officers will be deployed on the streets of Sydney after 15 people were killed there earlier this month. And thieves have stolen tens of millions of euros worth of cash and valuables from a bank in Germany. Detectives say they used a large drill to break through the wall of the vault in Gelsenkirchen. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, a high of 8 degrees.
I'm James O'Brien. Thank you for listening to me on LBC throughout the year.
The independent sentencing review is good enough for everybody else, but what do you use instead?
Personal experience, lived experience. Listen, they're the facts, but for my lived experience...
They're the facts, but I know better.
They don't understand culture of the UK.
So what is it?
When have I criticised...
Why can't you tell me what it is? You're criticising people who don't know what the culture of the UK is, so you must be able to tell me.
I can't be asked, buddy. Have a good day.
That went well, didn't it, buddy? I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
Thinking about goals this time of year? Like saving money or buying a new car? Well, right now you can save £3,750 on the all-electric Mini Countryman with the electric car grant. Yep, two goals in one and you get more space, more adventure, more Mini than ever. I feel a cheeky little smile coming on. Start living the big life for less and save £3,750 with the electric car grant. Visit mini.co.uk/grant. Grant available for specifications up to £42,000. T's and C's apply.
With Amex Gold, Dan earns points on obscure vintage football shirts and cheesy chips before the match and on tickets to the game. And he can put those points towards the cab home when they lose 4-0. And that's because Amex Gold lets you earn points on what you love and what you don't to spend on things you like.
Representative 86.3% APR variable. Annual fee applies after the first year. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval.
On Booking.com, it's easy to book your holiday home. And thanks to flexible cancellation, there's no more...
Lodge is all booked, folks. Oh, Kaz and Rob are coming now. Oh.
With Booking.com, you're free to be flexible.
Oh, easy.
So you can go from home to holiday home with no dramas.
Bigger place booked.
On Booking.com, finding a holiday home is easy.
And relax.
Booking.com. Booking. Yeah.
Terms apply. Available on selected properties.
Sail into 2026 and save 15% when you book early. Pastries in Paris, wine tasting in Bordeaux, skiing in Chamonix. Your European adventure starts here with P&O ferries from Dover to Calais. Book early for 2026 and save 15% off standard fares for long breaks. Book now at poferries.com. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Travel without the travel.
This is LBC. Message Henry Reilly on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60 973.
8:34, the time. We're talking about Roman Abramovich. Well, actually, more specifically, the Shadow Attorney General, Lord Wolfson, who is acting on behalf of Roman Abramovich. Now, he says that that obviously doesn't mean he condones the Russian, sanctioned Russian billionaire, but the Labour Party is saying it's a conflict of interest. How can you have the most senior Conservative legal advisor advising or working for, acting on behalf of someone who is sort of at direct odds with UK policy, because we want to recoup those funds, the frozen assets, to invest them, to spend them, however you want to put it, on the war effort in Ukraine, help the people who've been affected by that Russian invasion. Debbie's in Epsom. Hello, Debbie.
Morning, Henry.
Morning.
Well, I just think, simply, there's a conflict of interest. I just can't understand how anyone can't see that. It's like a criminal barrister acting for the prosecution and the defence at the same time, which would obviously never happen.
Well, he would say that he's not in government.
Well, he's very close to government. He's part of the shadow government, and I feel really uncomfortable that somebody who is representing Abramovich, you know, whatever they like to say about their principles, their morals, that I'm very uncomfortable that somebody in his position is both sides of the fence. And I think it also highlights the bigger picture of MPs generally who have another job. I've long felt that if you become an MP,
I think you're right there, yeah,
you shouldn't have another job. If you say you can't survive economically, well, then go and do your other job. But if you're an MP, it's a privileged position. I'd love to do it.
Yeah. I don't know. There's still time, Debbie. Who have you got in Epsom? It used to be Chris Grayling in Epsom, didn't it? You've got the Lib Dems there now.
And we've got the Lib Dems here now, yes.
Were you not going to put your hat in the ring for the next one?
Do you know, I'm often tempted, but it's such a murky, horrible world, as we're talking about now.
Gina Miller stood in your seat as well, didn't she?
Yes, she did, yes.
That didn't go particularly well. Let's not talk about that.
No,
I agree with your point about second jobs, though, because, look, some of them are honourable, and I get So, for instance, in fact, I'm not going to name her, but there are some MPs who are A&E doctors as well, and I get that it's a good experience to go on the front line. However, if you are being paid... I know this is a weird hill to die on, but bear with me. If you are being paid by the taxpayer, I don't really want you on an A&E shift once a week or once a month. Like, I mean, that's not really your job, to quote Roy Keane.
100%. I totally agree. And I think if you've got time to do, well, to be an A&E doctor, how much time are you giving to being a politician?
Yeah.
It should be a full-time job. It presumably is a full-time job. How can you do two very demanding jobs at the same time? And I would suggest that both of the jobs potentially could suffer them because you're not giving either your full attention.
Yeah.
So I think this highlights that issue as well.
I think you're spot on. Debbie, thank you in Epsom. Do you agree with Debbie this is a conflict of interest? I think he I understand why he's done it. I mean, quite why the Conservatives didn't think this would blow up in their own face, I've got no idea. But I do agree with Debbie on the point about second jobs as well. I remember George Galloway, when he was an MP, he was earning at one point more than... He was the highest paid MP. I think this is when Gordon Brown was Prime Minister. He was earning something like 800 grand a year on top of his MP salary. And again, the other one... And by the way, I'm a big fan of him because he read us Twas the Night Before Christmas on Christmas Eve this year again, was Sir Geoffrey Cox, the former Attorney General. Very good, by the way, if you want to listen back on the LBC app on Catch Up. It happened at... What time was it? 10 to... Or 5 to 7. He earns a lot of money doing outside cases as well, again, as a KC, as a very eminent barrister, and that is fantastic. I'm sure he's very talented. But if you're an MP, do you need to take on those cases? Do you need to be working? I mean, the salary's about, what is it for being an MP? About 92 grand a year now, I think. A lot of people who would dream of earning something like that, I mean, me included. And so the idea that you would need a second job or even want to do a second job, I don't quite understand why. 8:38 is the time. That number again is 0345 6060 973, the number to call. First, though,
perhaps you'd like to say what that very important paragraph...
Yes, so this is a letter from His Majesty the King. It's an invitation for a second state visit. This is really special. This has never happened before. This is unprecedented. I think that just symbolises the strength of the relationship between us. So this is a very special letter. I think the last state visit was a tremendous success.
It was.
His Majesty the King wants to make this even better than that. So this is truly historic. What I haven't got yet is your answer. I do need to.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, it's sort of toe-curling listening back, isn't it, to that? I understand, by the way, I was one of these people who at the time thought Keir Starmer had played a bit of a blinder and that was the right thing to do. And I do sort of think, still, that is the only way to handle President Trump. It may be cringeworthy, it may be toe-curling, it may be far from ideal, but guess what? Love Actually isn't real life. If Keir Starmer really made a hissy fit in front of Donald Trump the same way that Hugh Grant did to the US President in Love Actually, he's not going to be praised, and this idea that everyone's calling up to say congratulations is going to be an absolute disaster. So I understand the romanticism of saying, oh, we should stand up to Donald Trump. Keir Starmer clearly doesn't agree with him. He's a bully. 47% say the Prime Minister, according to this poll in the Mirror, should be harder on President Trump, more critical. I think, unfortunately, noting that it is cringy and it's far from ideal, I do sort of think that love bombing him, for want of a better phrase, is the best approach. But do you agree? Would you like to see the Prime Minister take a firmer approach? Laurie Laird is a US political commentator who's from Philadelphia, but is currently in London, lives in London. Laurie, do you agree with the people in this poll who are saying we should be tougher on Trump? Morning.
Good morning, Henry. Isn't it remarkable how that clip that you just played gets more toe-curling every time you hear it, doesn't it? My God, I don't remember being as sort of feeling so filthy the first time I heard it, but my God, listening to it again. Look, it is one thing. I agree with what you said. I think it probably was a smart move to invite Trump again and to flatter him in the very obvious way that Starmer did. There wasn't a whole lot to lose by inviting Trump back here for another state visit, but it sort of depends on what you're going to give up to get in the man's good graces, doesn't it? And you know, love bombing him seems to work for some leaders, but some leaders who have taken a tougher stance toward him, like Claudia Sheinbaum, the Mexican president, like President Da Silva in Brazil, have really stood up to Trump and haven't suffered all that greatly for doing it. Brazil's a little bit different because Trump figured out that when you put tariffs on things that you can't make in America, like coffee and like chocolate, Americans get a little bit restive. So Da Silva had a couple of cards to play there, but sucking up to him doesn't necessarily work either.
Yeah, and I think Mark Carney, to mention the leaders as well, is probably a good example of someone who was pretty critical and to some extent sort of laughed along when Trump was calling him Governor Carney, but actually still didn't take any nonsense when he was sitting opposite him in the Oval Office.
Yeah, Carney for the moment seems to be getting it, you know, getting it roughly right. I mean, Trump is so erratic. You know, the Swiss ended up with a really high tariff rate, managed to get that road back a tiny bit. And I'm sort of contradicting myself here, but a couple of Swiss businessmen turned up at the Oval Office with a gold Rolex clock. And magically some of those tariffs on Switzerland came down a little bit. But the bottom line here, and it's painful to sort of say this, but Trump has in his own parlance some really big cards to play. And I know that Starmer worries about tariffs, but the other very big worry is whether Trump will continue, whether America will continue to support European efforts in Ukraine. America is not giving direct money anymore, but is still providing some really crucial intel and other sort of military operational support. And I think that Starmer is probably fearing, and other European leaders as well, that if they get a little bit too independent, will that support start to disappear? And look, we heard, you know, that when we saw Trump and President Zelensky on Sunday in Mar-a-Lago, you know, the music between them seemed okay, but Trump was still repeating some Putin talking points, like Putin wants to see the best for Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other evidence that that's the case.
And he took a call from President Putin, of course, but before the meeting. What would your advice?
And after.
What would your advice be to Sir Keir Starmer then in terms of approaching Donald Trump? Is it sort of keep it up or maybe start to change ever so slightly, be slightly more critical?
Well, you know, I think for Starmer, you've got to remember who voted for you? and that seems to be a vanishingly small group of people. But I don't think anyone here, regardless of what you think about the BBC, I don't think anyone in the UK would like to see Starmer grovel when it comes to this legal case between Trump and the BBC. I think Starmer does need to be seen to stand up for Trump and suffer whatever consequences. You know, if Trump, you know, Trump loves being tariff man, and he loves controlling people through variability of tariffs. And I think that Starmer's just going to have to put up with that.
Thank you very much for your time. Laurie Laird is a US political commentator who is from Philadelphia but lives in London. You might have views on that. What sort of approach do you want? I was going to say Donald Trump. What sort of approach do you want Keir Starmer to have, our Prime Minister, or indeed the Labour government? Because Keir Starmer might not be there for the full term that Donald Trump is in. It doesn't quite work like that here as it does over there. What approach should our government take when it comes to Trump? 0345 60 60 973 to have your say on that. And Roman Abramovich. We're also going to talk about...
I'm not bothered.
The boos ring out at Ali Pally for Luke Littler, the battle of the boos. He played on Monday where he was booed. He's going to be playing again tomorrow night. We'll be speaking with the legendary former darts champion, Bobby George, a.k.a. Bobby Dazzler, next. 8.45 the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Eurostar passengers are being told to expect delays and cancellations after a power outage in the Channel Tunnel. Tributes to the victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack will be made at New Year's Eve celebrations in Sydney later. And thieves have stolen tens of millions of euros worth of cash and valuables from a bank in Germany. LBC weather, a cold start across the UK, staying dry with lots of sunshine for most and a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still quite busy on the M25 clockwise at Junction 12 at the M3. It was after that fuel spillage from earlier. Everything's open now, so hopefully those delays will clear soon. Not so good news on the M25 clockwise at Junction 7. So this is coming from the M23. The entry slip road's been closed, and that's following an accident. Very slow on the M1 northbound to Junction 14 at Milton Keynes, and that's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. Now, the Eurotunnel and Eurostar services still reporting various delays and cancellations after the problems inside the tunnel yesterday, and no Bakerloo line running because of a signal failure.
This is LBC.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. All the time the cat tested his nine lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to celebrate. Not a bad way to start the new year. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:48 is the time. A lot of people irritated that I picked on MPs who are also doctors. I was more sort of using the example that there are clearly second jobs that are more worthy than others, but I just don't think MPs should have second jobs, full stop, Adam says. So when you're looking for an example of a second job, you picked an NHS doctor. What about Nigel Farage, the most glaring example of a conflict of interest, says Adam. Again, noting he does have a second job, I was just pointing out that if you are paid as an MP, I don't understand. It's great that if you want to go to your local hospital and do a night on the ward, fantastic. But whether you should have to do a certain number of hours per month, given you are an MP, I mean, I suppose it is your free time, but I just don't necessarily know if that's the right idea. Max in Earlsfield says, in defence of the A&E MP, I remember that they had to continue to work as a doctor to fulfil a certain number of hours as a doctor, otherwise they lose their licence to practice and continue to be registered as a doctor. Once that person is no longer a voted MP, then they would go back to being a doctor, but if they haven't done the hours and kept the licence, they wouldn't be able to. Sure, but I mean, can we not make some sort of exemption for MPs? 8:49 is the time. We'll talk more about that in a moment. First, though,
I'm not bothered. Really, I'm not bothered. Really not bothered. Can I just say one thing? You guys pay for tickets and you're paying for my prize money, so thank you. Thank you for my money. Thank you for booing me. Thank you.
Yeah, Luke Littler saying he has no regrets for the way he reacted to the hostile fans as he reached the quarterfinals of the darts, of the World Darts Championship at Ali Pali, Alexandra Palace. He said that he expects the worst as he expects to face the crowd again tomorrow. Let's bring into the conversation the legendary former darts champion, commentator Bobby George, a.k.a. Bobby Dazzler, and joins me now. Bobby, thanks for joining us. Firstly, I can't quite understand. He was nominated for Sports Personality of the Year. Why was Luke Littler booed in the first place, do you think?
Well, when he got to the final the first year, he was very young. He's young now, so six, not quite 17. And people booing his opponents when they wanted a shot because they wanted him to win. And then he became World Championship winner, and obviously, things can change. People, when you're up the top, you've got to expect to take a few boos. I mean, I had a lot of boos. You know, people talking about me, oh, that gold ain't real and all that. You know, all stupid things. And all you say is, in your mind, just say, it's the same price. I'm getting paid win or lose here, so what am I worried about? But you don't tell him that. It's the way he told me. He's a man now. He's 18. He ain't a baby no more. But he did, he spat his dummy out that night a little bit, to be honest with you.
Mm.
Mind you, I can understand. When you're playing and you come off playing, then they put a mic straight under your chin and ask you questions. You don't have no thinking time. You're so wound what the game was and how you feel. So they really, the people asking that question shouldn't ask a question about the crowd. Just ignore it, because he's not trained to talk properly. He's a dart player. And anything you say in the media, they can twist it and make it bad.
Yeah.
But he was a little bit arrogant when he was playing against Cross. He won comfortable in the end, but he could have come unstuck. Because the crowd was all for the other player.
Yeah.
And they don't like it. He's got to grow up, really, to be honest. Just ignore it.
Well, I was going to say that, obviously, as you mentioned, he is still very young. What would your advice be? Is it just that? Is it just to ignore it and take it as part and parcel of being at Ali Pali?
Yeah, well, anywhere they can boo him. You know, he's got to just... Look, he can play darts. He's a great player. He's the best player in the world. No doubt. But the thing is, he's got to act good. It's not just on the dartboard, it's off the dartboard. It's the way you talk to people. People would like you still. But he was a bit arrogant the way he said it. He was nasty with it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, thanks for paying that money. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
But you're paying for my winnings. Well, they are.
Exactly, and you don't really want to point that out to people, do you?
Well, you don't want to put that down their throat, do you?
Exactly, there's a way of doing it. He's in the quarterfinals, as I mentioned, tomorrow. Do you think he'll go all the way?
Well, yeah, he's got, because I think he will, personally. I want to see how the crowd react to him. That's what, I'm not just going to watch the game, I want to listen to the crowd. Because now he's said that, they might give him plenty of booing, you know? The thing is, You can mouth off, but you've got to take it. Eric Brister used to do it big time, but he could handle it. He loved that. He loved people booing him. Made him play better, he said. But if you're not used to that, he's wrapped up in cotton wool for a couple of years. People can't say this to him. He wants, demands this, he demands that. Of course, without these people, without the audience, you're not going to get the money. He's right there, but it's the way he said it. You just got to learn. Someone's got to teach him to talk properly. Oh, the way he talks is a difference.
It's a way of being coached. And I wonder as well, people who haven't been to the darts will say, well, you don't get this at cricket or rugby. They're almost slightly surprised. What would you say? It's not sort of done in a mean way, if I can put it like that, to Luke Little. It's more sort of teasing from my reading of it.
Well, it's not that. It's just a betting they have. You know, if they want him to lose and they've had a bet he's going to lose and he's got a double to win, they boo, hoping he don't hit it. That's all part of the game, you know. He's got to learn to handle that. Just take it on the chin, as they say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more. Bobby, thank you. Pleasure to have you on. Real privilege. Legendary former darts champion and commentator Bobby George, a.k.a. Bobby Dazzler, with the very latest. Luke Littler, as I say, playing tomorrow night. Whether he is booed again, I'm sure we'll probably touch on that story again if he is booed. Back to Roman Abramovich. You might have views on Luke Littler, by the way, but it's Roman Abramovich that's got you calling in at the moment. Mike's in Slough. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Henry, how are you?
Yes, good, thank you. What do you think about Lord Wolfson acting on behalf of a sanctioned Russian billionaire?
I have a couple of points just counter to what other people have made. So he's not a member of government, he advises the government, right? And he advises the shadow government.
Well, the shadow government, yes.
Yeah, but they don't make decisions, so he can't influence decision-making on current legal affairs. And he's representing Roman Abramovich in a case in Jersey, not the Chelsea case.
Yes.
So in a different legal jurisdiction to the UK, although they follow UK laws. There is no conflict between arguing a case in another country as opposed to the UK.
On paper, you're completely right. But as a caller pointed out earlier on, is it not a case of optics?
The optics are just, they seem like a diversion tactic almost. Like it almost makes me want to look at what's going on in, you know, what Labour are about to announce. Because it's sort of, he's been representing for a while. It's not come out of nowhere.
Sure, but I mean, he didn't have to act on behalf of Roman Abramovich. The cab rank rule doesn't apply because he's in Jersey. He sort of put his leader in a difficult position, would you not say?
So the cap rank rule is a UK thing, but it still applies in terms of being represented by the person that best fits the practice that you need. And from what I've read, Wolfson is commercial law, litigation, and international and business arbitration, right? So he is literally one of the experts in that area that is the case being fought in Jersey.
Sure, but he didn't have to, because you're not saying, to be honest, given that Ukraine is such a massive issue and that Donald Trump's saying we're going to get peace, I might leave working with Roman Abramovich because we want all of this money as quickly as possible to reach those who've been impacted by the war in Ukraine.
The ties with Russia optics is the only problem, but I wouldn't say it's a conflict.
Okay.
It's an optical issue. But then he's closer to getting the money if he's in the case, so he knows when it's released so he can get it funded to the UK quicker, right?
Well, that is true, and that is an argument I'm sure he will put forwards. Mike, thank you. Appreciate the call. Sean is in, I actually don't know where, in Cornwall, let's say. Hello. Hello. Where are you in Cornwall? I think it's my eyes.
That's quite all right, Henry. Good morning. It's Launceston in Cornwall.
It's Launceston. Please, I didn't butcher the pronunciation. What did you want to say, Sean? Right.
I've a fascinating show this morning. Thank you so much. A fantastic show.
Thank you. Checks in the post.
That's quite all right. I'm going to come from the other end of the tunnel here. Roman Abramovich is quite a wealthy chap by any measure. And yes, he would have had access, he would have had opportunity and access to seek legal representation from any one of a number of top legal firms, not only the UK, but further afield. What was his motivation in seeking out the attorney, the Shadow Attorney General's firm? What's in his mind? There's got to be more than simply the cash.
Well, as our previous caller said, I think it's about the area of expertise that Lord Wolfson specialises in.
Actually, I didn't...
Well, that's the suggestion. I mean, I don't know.
I missed the last conversation. I missed part of the last conversation.
That's all right.
It just
don't worry.
It struck me as being. There's got to be more. The Russian link. How they interfered. How Russia, broadly speaking, interfered in the Brexit vote. Interfered in all our. They've got bot farms, allegedly. Bot farms interfering in social media.
Bot farms.
There's
yes.
got to be some sort of destabilization or okay. some sort of interference, I believe, running parallel to this financial angle.
Thank you.
Just a thought.
Okay, no, thank you, Sean in Launceston. Any plans for tonight, New Year's Eve?
A quiet Chinese takeaway, really, and watching television.
Do you know, I'm doing the exact same, but I think it's an Indian takeaway, because I'm back with you on breakfast tomorrow. Sean, thank you. Look after yourself. Sean there in Launceston. We are going to move on, coming up. Ringo Starr's first wife in an upcoming film says she can't name any of the Fab Four. Why is she in a Beatles film if she can't name them? Plus... the sounds, of course, from New Year's Eve, but not if you go to Primrose Hill. For some reason, they've been stopped this year. People stopped from attending. The Royal Parks Police that the Met have scrapped is being blamed, we'll discuss. And...
the emergency department or the emergency ambulance service is not the place for hiccups and minor ailments.
A&E departments in England are being overrun with millions of patients seeking help for coughs, headaches and blocked noses. Why are people going to A&E for minor conditions?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, trains between London and Europe are running again, but with delays this morning after a power outage in the Channel Tunnel. Some passengers were left stranded on Eurostar and the shuttle services overnight. The problems have led to thousands of travellers having to make alternative arrangements to get away for the new year. Financial analyst Danny Hewson told LBC there are some other options.
Trying to get to Europe now is either going to be difficult or certainly expensive, so the cost of flights has jumped up significantly. And in terms of getting a Eurostar, well, if you're not booked today, then you're not going to get on. So Eurostar is saying, look, you know, we can exchange your ticket, free exchanges are available, you can get a full refund, but that won't cover booking costs.
Tributes to the victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack will be made at New Year's Eve celebrations in Sydney later. Officials say police officers will be deployed on the streets of the city after 15 people were killed there earlier this month. More than 500 new ambulances are ready to start treating patients across England. The NHS has described it as the biggest upgrade to its fleet in recent years. They'll be equipped with new navigation technology and safety equipment. Jason Killens is chief executive of the London Ambulance Service.
They're new ambulances, and of course what that means is that our fleet is more modern, more reliable. It's off the road less, and that means we're able to respond to patients more quickly and provide a modern workplace environment for our people.
Security guards are among staff at the Palace of Westminster going on strike today. The Public and Commercial Services Union say around 300 of their members are due to walk out over pay and conditions. It's their fourth day of industrial action this year. And Arsenal are heading into 2026 as favourites to win the Premier League. They beat Aston Villa 4-1 in their final game of the year, leaving them 5 points clear at the top of the table. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with lots of sunshine elsewhere and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
Oh, you know what?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip, crisp, combo, hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
3 minutes past nine the time. Good morning. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. We're going to be talking about the primary care crisis that we have at the moment, being blamed in part by millions of people going to A&E for coughs or hiccups. Why do you suppose people are flocking to A&E for minor ailments? We'll get your views on that. Also,
a teenager, I was attacked on a train. I'd sort of forgotten about it, but I remember at the time being so angry.
Queen Camilla speaking this morning with the BBC will tell you what she has had to say. And
baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
The actress who plays Ringo Starr's wife, why did she accept the role? In the forthcoming film about the Beatles, the Fab Four says she can't name all four members. Again, I ask, why is she doing the film?
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good morning. 4 minutes past nine is the time. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Talking this hour, something I touched on with the chief exec of the London Ambulance Service, and I'll tell you, remind you what he had to say in a moment. But this, the millions of people who are turning to A&E departments in England for minor ailments, including coughs, blocked noses and hiccups, according to data that health leaders lays bare a failure to give patients prompt access to primary care. Now, emergency wards, I mean, it seems obvious to say, but are designed for people with serious injuries and for life-threatening emergencies. That is the sole use for A&E, but many now, we read, are becoming swamped with patients whose concerns should be dealt with elsewhere, including a near tenfold increase in people seeking help for a cough. Now, I do understand that if you have a cough, for example, and some of the sort of information campaigns you hear and some of the health advice, you may well think it is more serious, and so you rightly and understandably want to get it checked out. Men in particular already are not very good when it comes to going to the doctors and going to A&E, and so I don't want to for 1 minute put people off going to get their health checked out. Of course you should. When we do have real problems within primary care, real problems within A&E, and people are going for hiccups, feeling dizzy, or other minor conditions, you have got to really look at where the priority is. And I'm not actually blaming patients for this. I think in some cases people do take the mick, because you do have people who, you have, I actually have some friends like this who are Let's just say they any sort of minor ailments and they think the world is about to end. And so they do take it incredibly seriously and they think that they have this, that and the other because of Google Doctor and they use AI, I don't know, ChatGPT. And they from having a cough, they then suddenly think that they're going to die in about 20 days. And so I think that rise in sort of online information, whilst it's great, in some cases has led people to think the worst. And for hypochondriacs, it's been pretty bad. But what do you put this down to? If you work in the health service, I know it's a busy day for you if you work in A&E, for example, given that it is New Year's Eve. But tell me what the reason is, you think, for so many people going to A&E because of a minor illness. Do you blame other health professionals on, and it's not a sort of blame game, that's probably the wrong word, but is it overly cautious doctors, for example, within GPs, or is it people calling up 999, the handlers, and indeed 111, who are sort of using the advice and taking it at face value, but not really taking into account the fact that many of these A&E services are extremely busy and can't necessarily deal with people going in for, as I say, sore throats or hiccups or indeed a cough. I mean, I think if you've got hiccups, for example, there is a fair argument to say you need to take some responsibility and not go to A&E. Let's be perfectly honest. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. You can text 84850 or ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC. In the last 5 years, doctors saw almost 1.9 million cases of people seeking help at A&E for a headache, 1.4 million in the last 5 years for people with a cough, and 1.2 million for a sore throat. Noting how much it costs on average for every appointment within A&E, you like to think there could be a different approach to people with those minor ailments than going straight for the A&E lever. 7 minutes after nine is the time. Before we bring in the chief executive of an NHS Foundation Trust earlier on, I spoke with the chief executive of the London Ambulance Service, Jason Killins, about this.
The emergency department or the emergency ambulance service is not the place for hiccups and minor ailments, as you say. And of course, patients, people who have got those minor ailments can access care and advice either through 111 or through the Pharmacy First scheme, which is where pharmacists can treat and indeed offer medications for a range of minor conditions.
NHS England said the NHS was working hard to increase the number of routes to care, saying we have launched a campaign urging people to use the range of alternatives to A&E to get them help and the help they need in the most appropriate place, whether online, on the phone or in person. Nick Hume is chief executive of the East Suffolk and North Essex NHS Foundation Trust. How much of an issue is this, Nick? Because if you look at the figures and take them at face value, it does seem like an awful lot of time is being wasted. Good morning.
Good morning. It is an issue. It's been an issue for as long as I can remember in A&E departments or emergency departments up and down the country. And I think, you know, you've identified in your preamble there many of the reasons why we have this situation. First of all, it is free at points of access. There is no consequence for people turning up. The first question that a receptionist or a triage nurse will ask is, have you tried to get an appointment with your GP? People will say yes. We don't always know that that is the case. But it's something I talk about a lot is that people will come to the only place where the lights are always on. And we are a 24/7 service. As I've said, a bit of a pithy comment, but A&E does stand for accidents and emergency and not anything and everything. So we do need to be clear about the fact that people need to come to A&E if they are concerned. The world's moved on, though, I think, and you heard from my colleague in the London Ambulance Service just now, that there are alternatives. There is NHS 111. We do encourage people to call before they walk, get the best possible advice. But at the end of the day, it is very, very difficult and countercultural, really, for our staff to turn people away, even if it is banned or obvious that they don't need the services in A&E department. One of the things we have done, and many departments across the country have done this, is to co-locate an urgent treatment centre, which is primary care-led, next to A&E, so patients will come in, get a good triage from a senior clinician at the front door, and then be diverted either into our emergency department or to the urgent treatment centre that is primary care run to deal with those minor injuries and ailments that you mentioned earlier.
Why is the triage system sort of not work? Why aren't people just told if they say, yeah, I've got a sore throat or got hiccups, why aren't they told immediately just to go home?
We do encourage that. We do try and book appointments directly so we can. We do have access to book people. But most people say, well, look, I'm here now, so I'll wait. Even if, sadly, the wait can be several hours. People say, well, I've come all this way. I might as well wait now. And I think we're reluctant to send people away. There will be a consequence if we send people away. We know how people will react to that. And there will be the 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, whatever, where there is a serious ailment, where that persistent cough that somebody's had for several weeks is something a lot more serious. And I think you were alluding to earlier that balance between recognising that there will be some underlying problems somewhere that are quite serious that will need treatment. And what we don't want to do is to turn those people away. We've tried so many education, different ways of educating people and advising people and everything else. It just doesn't seem to move the dial.
We spoke a lot in the last few weeks about flu, for example, and it's right that we raise awareness of that in the media, for example, and it was exacerbated by the fact that we had resident doctors also on strike, and so there was a story to be told about the state of the health service. But to what extent do you think that does mean that when people do have a sort of blocked nose or a cough, they fear the worst, and so they're sort of almost scared into attending A&E?
I think there may be an element of that, but I think it's just about the availability. I think that people think, oh, you know, it's been going on for a while, I might as well pop in. You know, I've sat shadowing receptionists and they say, well, you know, I've had a sore shoulder for about 3 months. I had a day off work, so I thought I'd pop in and see somebody. Yeah. That is not what A&E is there for. We often talk about the lack of investment in primary care. I think that is true. We know that primary care hasn't had the investment, a lot of investments going to hospitals, appropriately so. But as we shift, you know, the NHS 10-year plan is that shift from hospitals into community, a shift to prevention. If the investment follows that ambition, then we may see that change going forward.
Can I ask you about pharmacists? A few people have messaged in saying, and noting of obviously you've worked in healthcare for an awfully long time, saying, I mean, for instance, this from Russell in Thailand says, I believe pharmacists should do much more. They should prescribe more. And that would take pressure off GPs and hospitals. If you increase GP appointments and do give pharmacists more power, more authority, could that be part of the solution?
Yes, and I think we've seen that. We've seen that Pharmacy First is now providing a lot more support to people with minor illnesses and ailments. And I think, you know, but the first thing I'd always say is NHS 111, make that call, go online, describe your symptoms. They will look at the algorithm and they will refer you to the most appropriate place for your care.
Lastly, this is going to be the last time we speak, as in your role of Chief Executive of the East Suffolk and North Essex NHS Foundation Trust. You've chosen a rather busy day to retire. Tell us more.
Yes, it is after 46 years. Today is my last day in the health service. It's been quite a journey, but it's delighted to be able to talk to you this morning. As it will be a busy day, and I shall be leaving at whatever time this evening, and enjoying the new year, and then watching the NHS with interest, but perhaps not quite with so much stress and anxiety.
Yes, quite. As I say, I doubt you'll be clocking off at midnight when you sort of officially retire. Nick, thank you for all of your help down the years when you're in role, and I hope we can speak again with your reflections after, as you say, 46 years in the health service. Nick Hume there, Chief Executive of the East Suffolk and North Essex NHS Foundation Trust, who is retiring at midnight, or there or thereabouts, after 46 years in the health service. So, really, I want to know what you put this down to with regards to people. Is it a case of too many hypochondriacs? I think that's probably not the case, but that might be part of the solution. Is it a case of just simply cannot get a GP service? Do you blame, like me to some extent, people Googling their symptoms and thinking the worst and then sort of in the next breath calling 999 and heading to A&E? What do we put it down to, the fact that we have millions of people with coughs, blocked noses and hiccups going to A&E when really those appointments could be better used elsewhere? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Your views on that next. Plus, you'll be familiar with that song at the turn of the year every year. You won't hear it, though, at Primrose Hill. Tens of thousands of spectators usually gather to watch the fireworks. They can't this year. Why? Well, that's because we scrapped the Royal Parks Police. We'll get more on that in a moment. 9:15 the time, the news with Lottie Morley.
Trains between London and Europe are running again this morning, but with delays after a power outage in the Channel Tunnel. Tributes to the victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack will be made at New Year's Eve celebrations in Sydney later. And more than 500 new ambulances are ready to start treating patients across England. LBC weather, a cold start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the M25, the clockwise entry sit road at Junction 7 at the M23 is closed, and that's following an accident. Still very slow on the M1 northbound at Junction 14 at Milton Keynes, and that was after an accident where two lanes remain closed. Also, the problems continue on the trains. Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services are going to and from Liverpool Street Station again today because of the engineering works. Weaver Line services also can't go to and from the station. They're only going as far as London Fields instead. The Eurostar and Eurotunnel still suffering with some delays. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the entire Bakerloo line after that trap problem from earlier.
This is LBC.
Your morning toast is shaking because the McDonald's breakfast bundle means you can bag a sausage sandwich and a selected drink for $2.99. Name a better way to start your day. Wake up and get that savour satisfaction. Until 11 a.m. Not on delivery. Includes a sausage sandwich and a selected drink. Price of participation may vary.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to celebrate. Not a bad way to start the new year. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message Henry Riley on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60 973.
Why are so many of us going to A&E for coughs, blocked noses and hiccups? John's in Muswell Hill. Hi, John.
Yeah, good morning. I had a couple of points. I'll come on to the second point, which was about my heart attack. But the first point was my mother is 99 and a lot of the problems are focused around access to the GPs, but fundamentally, you know, most of the time you can't walk in. Well, in my local GP, you couldn't walk in. It was like buzz off, call up 2 o'clock, or whatever it is. You can't get through, and then you can book online, and then it's weeks away, or there's no slots yet because all the slots have been taken. So a lot of the problem is with access to someone, and like, for example, with my mother, I mean, she could not manage because I had to phone on her behalf. But then when I went through, it was like directed me to the online and, you know, then to try and book through that. And that wasn't exactly straightforward. And I think that's a lot of the problem. People get fed up with that. Now, the second point.
So it's frustration. Well, you know, that's interesting. Just before you get into your second point, a lot of this is frustration at the state of sort of secondary care.
Yeah, because I think the point is that this was, I think, to manipulate the waiting lists so that the waiting list was shorter. If people can't get through, they're not on the waiting list. you know, so I think there's a cynical, you know, change in the rules, and it means less people are, you know, queued up or waiting for surgery, and therefore can't be diagnosed as needing, you know, being on a waiting list.
Yeah. Okay. So
the second point is,
yes,
related to that is, when I had my heart attack a couple of years ago, I was beginning to get angina pains, but I didn't recognise it. And when I started thinking I'd better get hold of the GP, an obstacle was the fact that I thought it's going to take a couple of weeks before I get seen. Now, what happened to me was I kind of went in, started going into work feeling pretty ill.
Yeah.
And I travelled into Stratford, got on, walked up the stairs rather than taking the escalator, and I was, you know, basically getting into, well, or might have already had a sort of a heart attack, and I ended up going into the office. Now, the thing is, when I got to the office, I had tried to get some aspirins, and then I said, start telling people I'm feeling ill, and I put myself in recovery position in the office. But then the big problem was phoning, you know, 111, we did, and then I said, no, you've got to phone 999. But in the 30 to 40 minutes I was lying there, I actually had a cardiac arrest.
Oh, my goodness.
And the ambulance hadn't come. And what happened was, yeah, so I conked out in the office for about 10 minutes. They had to defib me and everything. What I was lucky was because the paramedics had got there. But even when I came to, because they managed to revive me, they actually had to yell down the line about the ambulance, get it now, get it here now. And, I mean, so that's another side to it, you know, the length of time. So these are things that force people to walk into a casualty because, well, in my case, it would have been genuine. But, you know, there's failures in the system all the way along. They're all about, like, obstructing access. And anyway, I did have another conk out in the on the way to the hospital, another arrest. But I had a stent, and I was in hospital for about 4 weeks, so cardiogenic shock, the works. But, I mean, I survived. Apparently, only 20% of people survive if they have a cardiac arrest outside the hospital. And I also had cardiogenic shock, and there's a low survival on that, but I got through all of that. But, like I said, I probably didn't go to the GP partly because of the issues with access to, you know, appointments in a timely manner, even if you've got something more severe. You know, so I think a lot of the issue of why people are forced to go into the A&E revolves around this access. But I think an idea that was floated,
yeah,
and mentioned by the government, but I think there's a lot of talk and no action, was
on
these on the high street, you know, like clinics where you could just walk in
centres, yeah.
Yeah. I just don't know why it doesn't happen, because people would walk into those if they had these minor complaints.
It would seem sensible to me. John, thank you, and sorry about your help. My goodness, you've been through it. John there in Muswell Hill, wishing you nothing but good health now. Marion, coming to you in a second. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Talking about the surge in people going to A&E for hiccups, coughs, and blocked noses. More on that in a moment. First, though, if you were hoping to, and very much this is a capital city story, but it's still an iconic spot in sort of England more generally, if you're hoping to enjoy the fireworks at Primrose Hill, where in previous years tens of thousands of people have, then I'm afraid you can't this year. That is because it's been shut now. Primrose Hill has been shut to New Year's Eve revellers after the Royal Parks Police were scrapped. There have been some horrific incidents that have taken place at Primrose Hill, and one did take place on fireworks on New Year's Eve, during the fireworks. But nonetheless, we have police there. You don't shut spots just because there's been a crime there committed in the past, do you? Let's bring into the conversation Simon Ovens, who's former chief superintendent at the Metropolitan Police and was commander of the Royal Parks Command Unit. People will be very disappointed, Simon. Is there any justification as to why they've shut Primrose Hill? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, first of all, it's spurious to say the reason for closing off Primrose Hill on New Year's Eve is because of the disbandment of the Royal Parks Command Unit. It's really nothing to do that. In past years, the number of officers from the Royal Parks OCU that were policing Primrose Hill on New Year's Eve was tiny. I think last year there were 15 officers from the Royal Parks OCU and over 140 from the local
but
borough.
But people will put two and two together, Simon, won't they? They'll say, well, in November or whenever it was, we had the Royal Parks Police officially scrapped, and now in December they can't go and enjoy the fireworks at one of the Royal Parks.
So they may put two and two together, but it comes up with the wrong answer. Okay. This is a matter for the Royal Parks Charity. They own the land. Primrose Hill is private land, really. It's a Royal Park. It's private land. So the Royal Parks Charity have decided to close it, and the reason rests with them. Maybe they're worried about having to pay for stewards. Maybe in consultation with the Metropolitan Police, it was decided that it wasn't efficient to put 140 extra officers up there from the local borough. But it's really a matter for the Royal Parks Charity to decide what they're going to do.
You understand why people are disappointed, though, Simon, because it's obviously a beautiful spot, firstly, but also a good spot to watch the fireworks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a wonderful. In years gone by, I've been up there myself and watched the fireworks on New Year's Eve because it was a big policing operation. The Royal Parks Charity, in consultation with the Metropolitan Police, no doubt gave it to consideration. But I think this is more to do with the Royal Parks Charity deciding not to put their own resources into it than anything to do with the Metropolitan Police. If it had been open, the Metropolitan Police, no doubt, would have policed it accordingly, as we have done for many, many years. It does become a hotspot for crime, because if you get lots of people there having a good time, it always attracts people that want to prey on the public by way of robberies, pickpockets and other antisocial behaviour. So I guess that is what went into the balance for the Royal Parks Charity to make their decision.
Quite, but I mean, that would seem to happen at all major. I mean, if you go by that logic, Simon, you wouldn't have the fireworks and people gathering by the London Eye in the first place, would you?
Oh, I'm totally agreeing with you, but you can imagine the policing operation that goes into the fireworks along the river and around the London Eye and Trafalgar Square. Eventually, I remember, you know, well over 35 years ago as a young PC policing the Trafalgar Square festivities on New Year's evening, and now it's far, far more complicated and larger with the fireworks going right down the river.
Is it time for some transparency, lastly, Simon, do you think, from the Royal Parks Charity, for example, to explain why? Because at the moment, people are going sort of mad about this on social media. They're scratching their heads. Would it be easy if they just came out and it properly explained why they've had to do this?
Well, I think from what I've read, they've made a link between the closure of the Royal Parks Operational Command Unit and blamed that. Now, there are many unfortunate things that would have happened because of the closure of the Royal Parks unit, to do with the policing of all the Royal Parks across London and the lack of patrols and possible increase in crime we would see there. But as I said, this is a superfluous argument to blame that on the closure of this. I would encourage the Royal Parks Charity to be perfectly frank. Are they worried about the cost? Because like every other government department and charity, they have to justify where every penny is spent, and they don't get any support from the government in terms of the money that goes into it. Are they worried about crime? Are they worried about risk to members of the public going there? But all of these things can be controlled and mitigated and made safer with correct cooperation between all the partner agencies and a proper policing plan. But if the Royal Parks Charity have decided to close it, that's a matter for them. Of course, there's always issues. Even if you say people can't do something, they tend still to go and do it if they want to. So even with this, I think I would expect to be some sort of policing planning operation to deal with the people that will turn up, will try and clamber over the railings, and will try and see the fireworks from that vantage point.
Thank you, Simon. Simon Ovens is former Chief Superintendent at the Met Police, who was commander of the Royal Parks Command Unit. They're a massive barrier. It's like sort of I went to the White House and all the boardings up there were after Jan 6th. It's completely boarded up, the Royal Parks, and there will be people are sort of posting pictures on social media, Primrose Hill, that is, of the Royal Parks. There will be people, you would imagine, who do still try and watch the fireworks, but no viewing from Primrose Hill. Apologies to John Sopel, who I imagine will be very upset. Marion's in Streatham. Hello, Marion. Is there anybody out there? Marion, are you there? Don't worry, we'll edit that out. Hello?
Hiya.
Hello, that's all right. You're just live on LBC. What would you like to say?
I work within the NHS, and I think that what it is with the A&E department is that there's not enough information around to let people know that you can actually, when it's non-emergency things, obviously, you can go and have a private consultation free with your pharmacist. They've got private rooms now in the pharmacy. And also,
Are you advised to do that, though, Marion? I mean, if I call up 111 and I say, look, I've got a sore throat and blocked nose and I'm struggling to breathe, I think they're unlikely to say, well, go to a pharmacist. They'll say, well, if you're really worried, you can go to A&E. I mean, is that part of the worry and the reason?
I think, yeah, that's part of it. But, I mean, obviously the services do you know, they ask you, like, how long has it persisted for and things like this. Because, obviously, over a certain period of time, if you've got a cough, like me, myself, I have a cough. I've got autoimmune disease, so I know that when I'm going to get ill, I do get very ill, but more or less it will go within like 7 days. If it's not gone within 7 days and it's getting worse as opposed to any better, then obviously I know that I need something else. And your previous caller, is it John? And he was saying about the system with Muswell the patches. Hill. Yeah, and things like that. Doing a patches request and you don't always get a call back within a certain period of time. I understand why people go to A&E, but there are other services. You've got walk-in centres that you can go to and get treated there, be issued antibiotics and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's a hard balance, I suppose, to know what's serious and what's sort of a minor ailment.
Yeah, and you, of course, when it's affecting you, you think the worst as well. And particularly if it was a loved one, say your mum or your dad, who says they're not particularly well, then you're going to take it very seriously, aren't you? Thank you, Marion. Nice to hear from someone on the front line as well. More calls on that in a moment. Also,
I remember anger. And I was so furious about it. And it sort of lurked for many years.
That's Queen Camilla, who has been in conversation with John Hunt. You'll recall the BBC racing commentator. His wife, Carol, and two daughters, Louise and Hannah, were killed by Louise, one of those kills, ex-partners. They have been speaking with Queen Camilla. We'll tell you what has been said in a moment. 9:32 is the time. The news is with Lottie Morley.
Passengers due to use Eurostar services today are being told to expect delays and cancellations. Officials say trains are running again after a huge power outage yesterday. Protests and strikes in Iran have spread from the capital Tehran to several other cities. The unrest, which has been ongoing for days now, is due to their currency plummeting and inflation. And New Year's Eve celebrations in Sydney will include a tribute to the victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack. There'll be more police officers on the streets after 15 people were killed by two gunmen earlier this month. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with lots of sunshine elsewhere and a high of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Hello, this is Mummy Phone. We're on holiday with an amazing beach. She's asked me to record her voicemail because she said if anyone hears the way I pronounce Menorca, they'll agree how important it is that we spend time together, undisturbed.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10.35 is the time. Back to the NHS in a moment. First, though, Queen Camilla has praised the courage of BBC racing commentator John Hunt and his family after his wife, Carol, and two daughters, Louise and Hannah, were killed by Louise's ex-partner. In a conversation with John and his surviving daughter, Amy, the Queen also shared publicly for the first time her experience of an attempted indecent assault as a teenager. Now, the Queen's been speaking during a discussion on violence against women and girls. This is a little of what Queen Camilla has told the BBC.
As a teenager, I was attacked on a train. I'd sort of forgotten about it, but I remember at the time being so angry. Somebody I didn't know, I was reading my book, and, you know, this, well, boy, man, attacked me, and I did fight back, and I got off. I remember getting off the train and my mother looking at me and saying, you know, why's your hair standing on end, and why's the button missing from your coat? And
of course, it was physical.
I'd been attacked, but I remember anger, and I was so furious about it.
Queen Camilla speaking with the BBC. Caroline Aston is a royal commentator and author. The Queen being so open, honest and sort of upfront about this, the impact you think that will have, Caroline? Good morning.
Oh, well, good morning to you. Pretty historic, isn't it? And, of course, part of this new trend of royalty being a little more visible and certainly far more open about personal things. We had the King's speech, of course, recently about his cancer treatment. And here we have Queen Camilla opening up about something that happened when she was 16 or 17 on a train to Paddington Station when this guy launched himself at her and she beat him off using the heel of her stiletto shoe to make a kind of human kebab, it would appear, of his more tender parts.
Right. That's quite the image, yes. And with regards to the King, when he spoke on Stand Up to Cancer, I remember the Cancer Research UK said 100,000 people had done their checker on the website. And as you say, this wider trend is seeing royals being much more open and honest.
Which, of course, they have to be. The monarchy, to survive, has to be relevant to the society, the world it exists in. And the old idea of mystique, things going on behind this misty curtain separating them from us, no longer holds true in a world where self-revelation is the order of the day. They've got to be open and they've got to, well, share enough to make people feel they are relevant and there's a bridge between them and us.
Is this a trend you think will continue and almost expand, Caroline? Do you think we'll see yet more honesty from the royals?
I think we will. Of course, they've been under quite a lot of attack just lately, certainly about the rather opaque nature of their finances. I was in debate with Norman Baker about this just before Christmas.
He's the former Lib Dem MP, just to remind people.
Yeah, and we both agreed that openness, particularly when it comes to money, houses, possessions, this vast parcel of stuff the royals own and have access to, is vital, particularly against a backdrop of a world where finance, keeping food on the table, roofs over the heads, is such a big issue. So ongoing, yes, and they need very good and careful PR advice to handle what could be a very hot royal potato indeed.
Caroline Aston is a royal commentator and author. Thank you, Caroline, for your time. The Queen going into some quite, I mean, Caroline went into even more imaginative detail, but the Queen being pretty open, pretty frank, and indeed detailed about what happened to her when she was much younger, when she was sort of 16, 17 years old. This was first reported in a book by Valentine Lowe, the former royal correspondent at the Times, royal editor. According to the book, Queen Camilla had been 16 or 17 years old when the incident happened on a train to Paddington Station. But Queen Camilla, they're talking about how she fought this man off. I wonder if, actually, you've done the same. Have you ever been in a situation where you've had to fight off an attacker like Queen Camilla did? We're talking, though, about the NHS. Aries is in Barnet. Good morning, Aries.
Morning, how are you?
I'm very well. I want to know what you think is the solution to people, millions of people, going to A&E for reasons that they don't need to.
Okay, I have a lot of solutions. Good. My wife's telling me normally they're wrong mainly, but
that's what
I've
wives
got
are
four
for.
Kids. I've been in, yeah, well, anyway. I've been in and out of A&E with them over the years many times as a result. Just in the nature of having children, things happen. And I always see it full, waiting for hours, and people that don't need to be there. And you see them after a while, they get up and they leave because they can't even be bothered to wait anymore. I think these days people have difficulty getting appointments with doctors. You know, you're stuck in the emergency queue, you're trying to time it to get there first and all the rest of it. And without maybe a support network of either family, friends that can help and advise you with stuff, the temptation is to go to the hospital for something that you know you shouldn't really need to go, because potentially as a parent, maybe you feel a little bit useless, you're not being able to help your child in what's going on. Or for adults in themselves, I think a lot of them just take the mic. And it's an easier option of getting something done and out of the way.
But people,
if you rock up at an A&E and you're there wasting their time, I think they should be penalised.
This all comes back to sort of ideas from previous health secretaries about charging people for missing appointments. You would charge people for being time wasters.
Appointments. Well, yeah.
The problem is there is you have all these information campaigns saying if you feel X, then it could be Y, i.e. it could be much more serious. Then they go to A&E and then you want to chuck them a fine for going there. They're only being safe.
You know what? I've been in a very similar position, okay, with my daughter at one point. The night before it happened, she was feeling like a little bit rough, a little bit ill. She said, like, oh, my tummy hurts, Daddy. Didn't really sort of take much attention of it because she wasn't exhibiting anything to show that she was in distress. Anyway, the next morning, she woke up in agony, vomited. I had to go straight to the hospital. The day before I'd phoned, was given whatever advice I was given, which was, you know, potentially tummy ache, nothing major. But the next day accelerated quite quickly. She ended up having surgery. Her appendix had ruptured. She had sepsis. So it was a complete... I've been in all of that tight position. I try when I, with my kids, work out what's going on. Not panic. Get some advice.
That's understandable, but I do still think it's probably wrong to blame people. There are time wasters, Aries. You are right, and that is the case, and that does happen, and that is part of the solution. But equally, we also don't want to be, as I said earlier on, men in particular are very bad at getting their health checked. Surely the last thing we want is to tell them, actually, you'll be fine, don't go to A&E. And people are frustrated as well. You've got to remember...
Having your health check, okay, that's a doctor's appointment.
Sure, but, yeah, okay. But part of the issue is, if people are having to wait ages to get a doctor's appointment, they are understandably frustrated.
Well, it all goes back to lack of infrastructure and not having enough of anything these days for everything that's going around, basically.
Well, that's true.
There's decisions that need to be made somewhere along the line. Nobody's making any decisions. You've got to do something. Why not try that? Because there are a lot of people taking the mic.
What would it do?
Yeah,
what
you
would
get a few people that aren't, fine.
Yeah.
But a doctor's not an idiot.
But what would you do to punish people? I say punish, probably the wrong word, but what consequence would people face?
I think you should have a financial penalty. You know,
How much?
You're going to sit there and rock up, waste the time of doctors, nurses, all the people involved in providing you treatment, preventing other people getting potentially urgent life-saving care.
£50?
You know, add all that up. No, that's not a financial penalty. And isn't anything that would prevent you thinking I'm going to go there. I'd say probably closer to, listen, if you can charge somebody, I don't know, £300 to take away their car that they parked incorrectly...
I thought that my sore throat was COVID and that I was dying and I couldn't breathe properly. And you're going to charge me £300 for being a time waster?
I think that's taking it to the extreme.
Well, okay. You went there with the fines.
A doctor knows half the time who's taken the Vic and who's not when they turn up. No. You know, obviously you need to have a little bit of discretion. But there needs to be something in place to deter.
Yeah. Okay. What are you doing tonight? Any nice plans for New Year's Eve?
You know what? Nothing major. I'm going to be at home, wife, kids, the two cats. Just relax.
How are the cats with the fireworks and with Jules Holland's Hootenanny? Are they all right with it all?
You know what? They're okay, actually. I had a bit of a panic with one because he managed to escape and then he didn't turn up for 2 days. And then when he did, he was completely
casual.
When
was that? What, earlier this year?
Yeah, fireworks this year.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's hope they stay put tonight. Thank you, Aries. Do you agree with Aries' idea for charging people 300 quid? I think it's a bit steep, 300 quid, if you go to A&E and you didn't necessarily need to. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Also,
let it be.
Plays Ringo Starr's wife in a forthcoming film, says she can't name all members of the Fab Four. How on earth have you gone through your life at the age of 28 and you can't name the Beatles? 9:45 is the time. The news with Lottie Morley.
Passengers due to use Eurostar services today are being told to expect delays and cancellations. Protests and strikes in Iran have spread from the capital to several other cities. And New Year's Eve celebrations in Sydney will include a tribute to the victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack. LBC weather, a cold start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, a high of 8 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Ware. Better news on the M25. The clockwise entry slip road has reopened from the M23 and the delays are beginning to ease. Still quite busy as well on the M1 northbound at junction 14 at Milton Keynes, but all the lanes are open here as well. No Woolwich Ferry running at the moment. That's because of a technical problem. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line after a track problem from earlier. On the trains, Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services are suspended to and from Liverpool Street. Some trains can go from Stratford instead, and no Weaver line as well to and from the station. They're starting and terminating at London Fields instead, and still some delays for Eurostar and Eurotunnel services.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Ian Dale.
Later, your predictions for 2026, and we'll ask if the meaning of New Year has changed. But first, protests against the regime in Iran. Why are they happening, and can they provoke change?
Ian Dale at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulgutthealth.com/radio.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico. Or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives. Or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
9:49 is the time. Paul is... Oh, my goodness. Is it Oswald Thistle in Lancashire?
It is Oswald Thistle.
Hello.
Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, sir.
And Happy New Year to all of you at LBC.
Yes, and a Merry Christmas.
Right. I would like to say that we need to restructure all A&E departments. We need to have a major trauma unit for people with head injuries, internal organ damage, etc. We need to have an urgent care unit for people with non-life-threatening conditions. We need to have a GP and minor ailments unit.
Yeah.
And we need to have a psychiatric assessment and early treatment unit. And these need to be fairly close together within one hospital, within each hospital. Then we could send patients who come in with minor ailments to A&E.
It's sounding expensive.
Straight down the corridor.
How are we going to pay for all of this, Paul?
With difficulty. I don't know. But I think it would work a lot better.
Yeah. Okay, well that's
the structure of A&E is not right at the moment.
I agree with that, and there's some interesting ideas there, Paul. But if we take the structure as is, is there an argument for patients to take a bit more, sort of, have a bit more awareness, a bit more responsibility?
People shouldn't be turning up to A&E with minor ailments.
No.
It's just a waste of A&E time.
Well, quite. Particularly on a night like tonight as well. I mean, it's going to be so busy for the people working. Okay, well, that's one solution. And what about, as well, we've spoken about frustration with lack of GP appointments, for example, or sort of service you get from pharmacists. Is that all part of the picture as well, do you think, Paul?
I think so, yeah, because if you can't get into your GP, people do go to A&E, don't they? You know, it's a natural reaction. So, yeah, we need to invest a lot more in GP services and local health service units, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people would agree with you, Paul. Thank you. Helen says, one of the main issues is health promotion. As a former health visitor and now head nurse in a private boarding school, I've seen firsthand how parents often panic when their children are unwell. Fevers are a normal physiological response to infection and play an important role in fighting viruses. However, despite reassurance from a qualified nurse, many parents remain anxious when their child is clinically stable and showing no red flag symptoms, and they insist on antibiotics or a doctor's appointment, which isn't necessary. This heightened anxiety frequently leads to unnecessary requests for medical reviews with expectations of antibiotics where they are not clinically indicated. And goes on to say there's a gap in the understanding from parents of childhood illnesses. Yes, thank you, Helen. Appreciate the message. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. First, though, I want to talk about the Beatles. A story, actually, it's in all of the newspapers today. And I'm not picking on this particular individual, by the way, Mia McKenna-Bruce, who is going to be playing Sir Ringo Starr's first wife in the upcoming Beatles. I thought it was one film, but it turns out there's going to be four new films for each of the members, by the way. The members which, by the way, Mia McKenna-Bruce, who's playing Maureen Starkey, can't name. Now, these films are due to be released in 2028. She is a BAFTA winner and spoke saying that we sang Eleanor Rigby in Yellow Submarine at school, but it wasn't my jam. Her casting was announced while she was filming some Agatha Christie adaptation, and Martin Freeman, it gets weirder and weirder, this story, Martin Freeman was teasing her over lack of Beatles knowledge. She says, Mia, he was asking me, i.e. Martin Freeman, to name all the Beatles. I didn't know. Then he'd ask which band was Mick Jagger was in. I was like, I have no idea. Yet now I'm like, oh my God, the Beatles are underrated. Wow. 28, by the way, the same age as me, and I can name you all the Beatles. Phil Collins, Mike Rutherford. Dr. Mike Jones is a reader in music industry at the University of Liverpool and has researched the cultural impact of the Beatles for over 30 years. Dr. Jones joins me now. How can you go your whole life at the age of 28 and not know the Beatles, Mike? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not surprised, really. I think of 9/11 as an event that happened very recently, and we have undergraduates who were born 5 years after it. I mean, but what happens is that history just becomes a mass, and Henry VIII is next door to dinosaurs, and you know something about Henry VIII or you don't, you know?
Yeah, that is true. And, I mean, for instance, in Liverpool, where I was recently, and I was doing they've got the Beatles Museum there now, and there's the cafe, I think, and you can't miss it when you're in Liverpool. But that's not the case across the country, the sort of cultural impact of the Beatles.
I think there is, invisibly, because I think so many people still identify with them and enjoy the music. And one of the things that what differentiated the Beatles from all other pop groups was that when they broke through, they crossed over the generations. So it was very young people to older people, and that's kind of remained in our culture. So there are people who can reference Beatles music and enjoy it without necessarily having to know the details anymore.
I hesitate to ask you this because I know you'll be a fan, but do we really need four more films about the Beatles?
To be honest, and this will cast me into Beatles Out of Darkness, I'm a little bit wary of four films because, honestly, I mean, it's telling the same story. You can tell the same story from four perspectives. That's Kurosawa. That's a film trope. But whether we can take four Beatles, you know, separate Beatles films, I'm not entirely convinced on this thing.
And you mentioned Beatles fans. Again, not wishing to single out Mia, McKenna, Bruce, but the Beatles mania, won't be particularly impressed that someone who's playing the wife of, or first wife of Sir Ringo Starr can't name the Beatles? Is that fair to say?
Well, what if she was playing Shakespeare in Love? I mean, you know, she's not going to know, you know, Shakespeare's relatives. They're actors, and actors deliver performances. They don't have to know every dot and comma about who it is they're performing, you know?
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Dr. Mike Jones is a reader in music industry at the University of Liverpool who has researched the cultural significance of the Beatles. 9:56 is the time. Oh, I should tell you, by the way, in case you're waiting with bated breath for 2028, the film stars Paul Mescal, who's in just about everything at the moment. He's going to be playing Sir Paul McCartney. Harris Dickinson is playing John Lennon, and I've just Googled Harris Dickinson. He's best known for the drama Beach Rats. Me neither. Joseph Quinn is going to be playing George Harrison, and Barry Keown as Sir Ringo Starr. So there we go. Later on the Beatles. Ian Dale could name you all the members of Mungo Groove, I'm sure. Mango Groove. Sorry, I can't get the name right.
There are 13 of them.
Are there 13? So oh, we can't.
I can name you two.
Okay, go on.
Claire Johnston and John Lydon.
There we go. More from Ian in a moment. First, though, Graham's in Clacton. Hi, Graham.
Hello there. How are you doing?
Yes, good, thank you. What did you want to tell me about A&E?
For me, the NHS needs to step up to the mark. We need to fund it properly. Start funding it properly.
And, it's already got a huge budget, though, Graham.
Well, yeah, but you know the money's not being spent correctly, is it? You know, and like that chap said a minute ago about dividing it up into the different sections of triage, it would speed the process up. People wouldn't be waiting around for hours. People would be getting dealt with. If they needed any extra treatment, that's fine. If not, they could be going home, can't they? People get worried, and, you know, the way things have been over the COVID and all the other things and that, people are scared nowadays, you know. Mm. Well, unfortunately, people are really scared nowadays, and it's bad that we've been...
There's being scared. Is there also some responsibility, though, Graham, as well? I mean, if you have got a blocked nose, for example, it's hardly the end of the world, is it?
No, blocked nose, but what you were saying about hiccups and that before...
Yeah, hiccups as well.
It can be a very, very serious problem for the children.
What, hiccups?
It can be life-threatening. It can be a sign of heart problems and that, you know?
Yeah, sure.
At the end of the day, like any symptom that you're not sure about, you need to be able to go and speak to the professional.
Not necessarily A&E, though, of course, Graham.
Well, that might well be the only option open to you. Like you say, you can't get hold of a doctor for love and money nowadays.
Okay, thank you. Graham in Clacton, you have the last word. That is it from me. Thank you very much for all of your messages. I'll be back tomorrow, next year, from 7 a.m. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player or the brand new LBC app where you can stay up to date with all of the latest news and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause, rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. That's the all new official LBC app. Download it for free from your app store now. At 1 on LBC, it is Sheila Fogarty, but now moments away, our special star, it's Mango Groove fan, Ian Dale.
That's very good.
That's all right, wasn't it?
I'm going to have to clip that up and send it to them. Thanks, Henry. Now, every few years, protests spring up against the fundamentalist regime in Iran, and each time they're extinguished. It's happening again now, with people protesting against the problems facing the Iranian economy, drought, inflation, and unemployment. Do these protests have any prospect of changing things for ordinary Iranians, and should they be supported by Western democracy? democracies, or should we stay well out of it? At 11, as New Year celebrations commence down under, what is the meaning of New Year and has it changed over the years? Why is it so much more meaningful in Scotland? At 12, I'll be joined by Nick Abbott, Simon Marks and Sheila Fogarty live, and they'll be giving me their predictions for 2026. And of course, I want yours too, as well as your New Year's resolutions.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, delays and cancellations are continuing on the Eurostar this morning after a major power outage. Thousands of passengers have been affected as they try to get away for New Year celebrations. Michelle was due to catch a train to Brussels for New Year's Eve, but told LBC she's still stuck at London St Pancras.
I had preparations today, but yeah, I cancelled those, so I hope I'll make it home in time for New Year's Eve. Yeah. So we'll see. Delayed is fine. As long as I can get home, it's already okay, but if it's not happening today, then I'll be a bit stressed out. But yeah, it is what it is.
Eurostar officials say they will try to run services as usual today. There'll be an increased police presence on the streets of Sydney this evening after the Bondi Beach terror attack. 15 people were killed when two gunmen opened fire at a Hanukkah event there earlier this month. Police Commissioner for New South Wales, Mal Lanyon, says there's a complex operation in place.
We will have over 2,500 police officers in the central metropolitan area alone. That will comprise officers on the land and on the water, and we'll also have our aviation support up in the air to provide support. I want the community not only to be safe, but feel safe.
Iran's government says it will listen patiently to protesters as demonstrations spread outside of the capital. People are protesting over the country's plummeting currency and inflationary pressures, which have pushed up the price of food and essentials. The Queen has praised racing commentator John Hunt and his daughter Amy for their courage after their family were murdered in their home. Louise, Hannah and Carol Hunt were killed by Kyle Clifford in Bushey in July last year. Thieves have used a drill to steal millions of euros worth of cash and valuables from a bank in Germany. They broke open more than 3,000 safe deposit boxes filled with money, gold and jewellery. Police likened the break-in to the Hollywood heist film Ocean's 11, saying it was very professionally executed. And new figures show the British music industry has grown for the 11th year in a row. The British phonographic industry says it's down to new artists like Olivia Dean and Lola Young. LBC weather, a chilly start across the UK with some wintry showers in the north, staying dry with lots of sunshine elsewhere and a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 3 minutes past 10 on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until 1. Now, we're going to spend a lot of the programme talking about New Year, what it means, resolutions, predictions, but that's coming up a bit later. In this hour, I want to talk about Iran because over the last 15 years since I've been presenting on LBC, there have been various spates of protests in Iran against the regime. The last one, I think, was in 2022. And it was predominantly women who inspired the protests. In the end, I was going to say they fizzled out. I think it's more that they were extinguished by the regime. And that happens an awful lot. And if you go back to the early part of the century, there were protests where people thought that Western democracies would come in and support the protests, and which would lead to the toppling of the Iranian regime. The American regime at the time decided to not do that. Many would say quite rightly, they probably interfered in too many regimes over the years. But I wonder what you make of this set of protests, because demonstrations began on Sunday all over the country because there is a real economic crisis in Iran at the moment. The Iranian rial, their currency, has plunged to a record low against the dollar. The head of the country's central bank has resigned because of that. And the protests against the economic circumstances, they seem to have morphed into something wider, where people are chanting death to Khomeini. He's the supreme leader in Iran. And they're protesting against draconian restrictions on women, with students and shopkeepers demonstrating in what's called a rare alliance against the government. While yesterday, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, in plain clothes, trapped students who were chanting freedom and death to the dictator inside Tehran University and attacked them. It's not known how many were injured. Roads were blockaded, shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar were shut, and riot police clashed with protesters outside the British Embassy in scenes of mass disobedience. Now, the unrest has spread rapidly across Iran, on a scale not seen, as I say, since the 2022 protests that followed the death in police custody of Mahsa Jina Amini. She was a 22-year-old girl who'd been arrested for allegedly not wearing her hijab correctly. Now, the Telegraph are reporting, they're quoting Nafas, a student at Tehran University, saying, students have been chanting since last night. The security forces surrounded the campus and rode their motorcycles around it. They returned today with batons, stun guns and tear gas. Now, why are we covering this today? Because I think it is important that, I mean, this is quite a significant moment in Iran because, of course, earlier this year, Donald Trump launched an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. The Israelis have launched attacks on Iran. And since then, frankly, we've heard not really a peep from Iran. But Iran is this incredibly significant country in the Middle East. So when you have these kind of protests, you have to ask yourself, well, do you think that they are actually going to have any effect on the regime? Could they, in the end, lead to the toppling of the regime? Now, I'm not going to sit here and advocate that we in the West should intervene here and do anything that is, well, that is seen as provoking things. I think if the regime is to be toppled, it does need to be done from the inside. But I know from previous times when we've talked about Iran that there's a tremendous Iranian diaspora in the United Kingdom. So if you do originate from Iran, maybe you've fled the regime over the years, and you want to tell us what you're hearing is going on because you'll have friends and relatives back in Iran, give me a call, 0345 6060 973. And should the West just stay out and let whatever will be, 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. And what's it like to live in a country where your freedoms are restricted, where you can't do what you want, you can't say what you want, you have to look over your shoulder all the time, you have security forces monitoring you maybe all the time, or at least you fear you do. What's it like to live in a country like that? Not necessarily just Iran. And how? What do you do about it? And in the end, is that why so many people flee to Western countries, just to escape that, because they're fed up with having their freedom restricted? Well, let's talk to Professor Majoub Zawahiri, who is an academic and expert on Middle East politics. Professor, very good morning. Can you give us, first of all, the background, the historical background to these protests, and tell us maybe, in your opinion, why previous sets of protests have amounted to very little?
This is the third demonstrations where Bazaar is fully involved. The first one, 2008, the second one, 2010. Both of them, they happened under Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and both of those demonstrations happened because of legislation change on taxes. The first one about VAT, 3%, and the other one about increasing the cost of living, renting houses to, taxes on revenue, which requested at that time 70%. This is the third time where Bazaar feels the heat. Basically, the Bazaar is indicating that people have no enough money to buy any kind of I would say need.